about.
So easy. You gotta put it in the
It's a bright and shiny day. It's a bright and shiny day.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Annual Quahog Star Trek convention, where once a year, sci-fi buffs take their lips off the barrel of a loaded gun and spend half a day adjusting their eyes to sunlight.
Yeah, it's a word that I was always told was bad, but then I use it on stage. I don't really understand why it's bad, and some dwarves were actually mad at me for using it in my act. I actually had one come up to me after a show one time and say that when you call a dwarf a midget, it's the exact same as calling a black person the N-word, and to that, I said... Midget, please.
And now.
When life throws you a curveball, lemonade.
Our feature presentation.
That's a wonderful lesson to consider today, Tommy Lee. Thank you very much for that. Hey, party people. Welcome into yet another all-new Kevin and Bean show. This time we're doing it for a Tuesday, the 11th of December. 2 weeks from today is Christmas, by the way.
Oh, my God. I have so much to do.
Yeah. 2 weeks from today.
I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I was having this conversation with my wife the other day about it, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of people, and I'm sure it just makes us bad people that our priorities are out of whack. But Christmas really seems more like pressure than fun in terms of just obligation. It's everything. You have to do all the regular stuff that you do, and then you just have to pile on a lot of other stuff. It's like having extra homework all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, that's so true now. And it wasn't always that way, was it?
I'm not entirely sure that I'm getting the benefits of Christmas out of it either because, you know, it's not like I have kids that I'm excited to, you know, sit around the tree and see them open their presents on Christmas morning and stuff. I'm not sure what the benefit is of Christmas for some people, like me included, you know?
Well, and I'm right there with you, actually.
It just seems like a big hassle.
Have you decorated already?
No.
I hung a string of lights yesterday on my mantle, and
check
I said, "Job done."
So festive.
That'll make me happy.
So festive.
Yes, exactly. That's my decoration.
Well, you have to remember, in my house, there's a little bit of a struggle because I love the year round Christmas tree. That's me, right? So Donna finally complained enough that we took down the Christmas tree in May.
Oh, my God.
So there's very little incentive to put it back up again already for her because we just had it. It was up for 2.5 years, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, you could probably go a year without.
So apparently we're not going to have a Christmas tree this year. So speaking of Christmas, a lot of people, and I just heard Lisa and Biermugger were having this conversation. A lot of people, it's just tough to find gifts for some of the people on your list. You know them, you like them. In many cases, you know, work side by side, you're actual friends. But you don't really know what they have or what they like or what would be appropriate. And that's why this story is interesting to me, because this is an item that I read about that I thought was an interesting publicity item. But what's the market for the $450 Starbucks gift card?
Wow.
You heard about this, right?
No, but I do know one person that would love it.
Look,
I wouldn't buy it for him, but
I get that people like Starbucks. I understand, and for some people are crazy obsessed with Starbucks. I mean, that's they go, you know, they have to go every day, sometimes more than once a day. That's their thing. That's what gets them through, right? Yeah. Well, Starbucks came out with this gift card. It's it's like a sterling. I don't want to say it's silver, but it's made of metal. Okay.
Oh wow.
It costs $450. The card itself, they say, is $50 of it, and you get $400. Of coffee off of it. It's a gift card for $400.
$50?
Yes, that's an additional fee just because of the metal card. Here's what you get besides the $400 that's on the card. You get a free drink on your birthday. You get a free drink with every 12 purchases. And you get free refills on brewed coffee and tea. In other words, their lowest level item. You get free refills on that.
I guess if you really, really, really used it, you'd make back the $50.
Yeah, you'd have to go a lot to make back the $50. Well, here's part two of this story, though,
okay.
Lisa. They go on sale yesterday. They sell out in seconds. Now there's a black market for them. They're on eBay. They've already sold on eBay for up to $1,500. On average, the ones that have been put up on eBay are selling for $1,000 or a little over.
I don't understand that. What?
So people are paying more than twice as much to be able to get this card. Now, how does that make economic sense?
Did I miss the latest jobs numbers? Are we at 0%?
This is why they hate us, kids.
How I hate us.
How does it make sense to pay an extra $500 or $600 or $900 for this card? Because there's no way the free refill and the drink on your birthday is ever going to pay you back for that.
No one can have that much caffeine.
No
or
one, right.
Unless you want your heart to explode.
Isn't this crazy?
So it's to get the metal card. That's the whole deal. Now, can you do you know if you can refill the
you
metal
know, I
card
haven't seen
with...
That. I was wondering about that too. I've not seen the answer to that question. I would assume. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe someone from Starbucks can email or tweet us or Facebook us and let us know. Somebody who works there. I don't know if you could refill it because it seems like that'd be a sad day if you have this spiffy metal card and then you run out.
Yeah, you know, you just spend $50 on.
Yeah. So some are listed on eBay, Lisa, and who knows? You know how crazy it'll get between now and Christmas. If this is even a Christmas thing, maybe people are just buying it for themselves. But some are listed for $5,000 on eBay.
No one's going to buy that.
There's a black market for Starbucks gift cards. What's happening, people?
We are. There's something terribly wrong with us.
What is happening? So,
oh, my God.
So I may have lost the holiday spirit, but apparently those people have it because they have their priorities in the right place.
I guess so.
It's getting more like communism saying we're going to do this and do that.
Actually, it is. That's an excellent point, sir. All right. I mentioned it's Tuesday. We got a great show today. Let's talk about it.
Wow. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you, Beer Mug. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up because in about 20 minutes or so, we continue our annual look back at the past calendar year. And this time we're doing the best of 2012 here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to count down. Lisa, you're going to be very excited. The top 10 Beer Mug moments of the year.
Yes. Can't wait.
I can't wait either.
He's had some classic moments, that's for sure. A friend of the show, Kevin Smith, is going to be stopping in to see us today. He made a lot of news this week with the announcement that he is going to be making Clerks 3, which is returned in one of his probably one of his most beloved movies that he's ever made, the first two Clerks movies. Funny man Eddie Ift on the program today. Comedian Ray Romano also joining us. He just spent the weekend with the president and Led Zeppelin. Be curious to hear his stories.
Wow. Okay.
Howie Mandel is going to be joining us. He's got yet another new game show on the air that premiered last night called Take It All. That's pretty crazy. We'll be talking to Howie. And we got your music tickets, too. We're going to be giving you a chance to earn those tickets a little bit later on in the show. As you know, they're playing two dates in January at Staples Center. Well, they've just added a third, and tickets for that are going on sale this week. But you can win tickets to one of the Muse shows, one of the great live bands on the road today, too.
Truly,
that's going to be a lot of fun. So that's all coming up. Plus, we got the Showbiz Beat. That's next right after this on the world-famous K-Rock. As mentioned, today is your day to win the tickets to go see that band right there in concert at Staples Center, January 23rd, 24th, and the new show added January 26th. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10. We're talking Muse. Your tickets coming up. All right, let's take a look at the Showbiz Beat. We'll get started, by the way. How about this with a pair of passes to the K-Rock Advanced screening of This Is 40.
Ooh.
I saw the Red Band trailer for that. You know what that is? That's the stuff that's too dirty to put in the trailer in front of general audiences in the theater.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Apparently, the article that I read yesterday, the great Judd Apatow, who we love all of his movies, he shot so much footage for this that they ended up cutting out like 2 hours of this movie. So there's all sorts of scenes, and it seems like all of them involved Paul Rudd's boner. I don't know what the hell was going on, but I guess they had to cut some of that out. So this trailer is filthy and hilarious, and I'm sure the stuff that's left in the movie is going to be just as good. The movie opens up everywhere on December 21st. That's the Friday before Christmas. You get to see it at the AMC Burbank 16 on the 17th. If you want to go, we'll take callers 10 through 14 right now at 1-800-520-1067. If the Valley is convenient and you want to see a hilarious movie, call now to K-Rock. All right, Charlie Sheen in the news today, Lisa, for two different stories.
Okay.
One thing we know he has is lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he's a very generous chap. Apparently he is not afraid to throw it around. We heard about the $100,000 that he lent to Lindsay Lohan. They met on the set of Scary Movie 5. He found out she was having those money troubles, and he decided to, you know, pay it forward. So he sent her the big check, right?
Right.
He told Entertainment Tonight that he is still waiting for any kind of acknowledgement from Lindsay. A thank you, a phone call, a text...
You're
a drive-by,
kidding.
Head in the lap, something. You'd think that if somebody shows up with $100,000 to like get the IRS to back off for a half a minute, that it might at least be worth saying, hey, thanks, Charlie. Right?
Damn.
That is stunning. Now, I will tell you that if he thought that was a loan, he's an idiot.
Because
it's not a loan. He gave her $100,000.
You don't give that much money to someone as broke as Lindsay and expect to get it back. I'm sure that was the plan, I think. I mean, I would imagine he would expect to get it back. But, I mean, at a minimum, shouldn't she be out in his driveway every Saturday washing his car and mowing his lawn? I mean, come on.
Unbelievable.
So that's thing one. TMZ has a great story this morning that Charlie was having a conversation with a Hermosa Beach police officer recently and learned about another police officer who had a 10-year-old daughter diagnosed with a rare form of cancer that requires incredibly expensive chemo and radiation treatment. It's some sort of muscle tissue cancer. Mm. Charlie says no parent should ever have to watch their kid go through that. The next day, he sent off a check to $75,000 to the Hermosa Beach Police Association, which has started a fund for the cop's daughter.
Wow. How nice is Charlie rehabbing his image, isn't it?
It might be.
I bet he's a genuinely nice guy.
And I will say I'm not wealthy, but if I had FU money, like some people do, like Charlie Sheen does, like tens of millions of dollars, that would be one of the great joys of living, would be able to help in situations like that, would be able to do something like this. You would feel so good about that.
Yeah, you would.
That'd be a great use of your money. But, yeah, you could be right. It could just be a rehab, but, you know, it's a win-win. It's good for Charlie. It's good for this police officer and his little daughter, too. So
that's very cool.
Great, great story, I think. Someone not having so much luck with the money is Pamela Anderson. You know, we talked about her last year. Remember they came out with that list we had never seen before last year in California called the Top 500 Delinquent Taxpayers.
Oh.
And remember there were a whole bunch of celebrities on there that we were kind of surprised to see were having trouble paying their taxes.
Yeah.
Pam Anderson is on the list again this year. She owes $260,000 on her federal return and another $112,000 on her California tax return as well.
Oops.
And I was thinking about this. I mean, you know, she had a pretty successful career with a number of TV shows, and she's done, you know, other things, modeling and things like that, Dancing with the Stars, things like that, that have paid a certain amount of money. But probably, there's probably not a, except for the Baywatch rerun checks, mm-hmm. I bet there's not a lot of high-paying, steady income coming in to Pam Anderson.
Well, and think about, I don't know, what's she done other than Dancing with the Stars in the last few years?
Yeah. It's not like she's got anything else going on right now. And I guess if you're continuing to live at the lifestyle that you had back when you were making the big money,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have that coming in anymore, I guess it would be pretty easy to, you know, to get in arrears with the IRS. No pun intended. But, I mean, that's, you know, that's almost $400,000. I mean, that's...
They haul people off to jail now.
Yes. Yes, they do.
That's a little scary.
I don't know what Pam Anderson is going to do. Like what are her options at this point?
Tommy Lee.
Here's Kevin Clash back in the news. You recognize the name?
Yes.
Of course, he was Elmo.
Elmo.
And that was a shocking allegation that was originally made and then retracted about that. The guy who said he had a consensual but underage relationship with Kevin Clash.
Mm-hmm.
And then he rescinded that thing. But then a second guy came through and said, oh, yeah, he was diddling me when I was under 18. And then a third guy came forward. Well, now a fourth guy has filed papers. He claims that he met Kevin in Miami Beach between 1995 and 1996. Back when Kevin was in his mid-30s, he was a teenager. They embarked on a long-distance relationship. But that Kevin Clash flew him to New York City where they had sex a bunch of times. Which, of course, would be transporting a minor across state lines for immoral purposes. But I have to ask you this. Why come forward, if you're this guy, the statute of limitations has expired. He can't be prosecuted for that. What's the draw to make that public now and file that? File that lawsuit. I mean, what do you get out of that?
Can he civilly get anything? Because I imagine Kevin Clash has some money, right?
Oh, I would imagine so, too. Yeah.
So, can you file a civil lawsuit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can. There's no statute of limitations on civil cases, right?
I have no idea. I'm just speaking out of my butt. I don't know.
It's just, and by the way, Kevin Clash, the Elmo puppeteer, probably speaking out of his butt, too. I'm sure that's one of his bedroom tricks.
You know what? Maybe he's just going to sell his story.
Yeah, I don't know.
Make some cash.
It's always weird to me when you wait until somebody else comes forward with the story before you go, oh, yeah, hey, me too. That happened.
But come on, you're coming after Elmo. Would you want to be the first guy to pull Elmo down? Who's going to believe you?
I don't know, but I mean, it just seems like if this is something that he, I mean, so you think maybe he's not even upset or hurt or damaged by this. Maybe he just looks at it as a way to get some money out of the dude.
No, I don't think that. I think the reason he might not have come forward until now is that he just figured no one would believe him, which would be an uphill battle. God, how devastating for his wife to hear that. He was like flying people.
Yes.
Into
yes.
New York.
Jeez. It is weird, though, to think about this guy, this unnamed person in this latest court case. I mean, in 1997, this had already happened, and then 98 rolls around, and then 99, and 2000, he doesn't say anything, and then another 10 years goes by, he still doesn't, and now all of a sudden he's filing a lawsuit. How many must there be, by the way?
That is a really good question.
Had four already.
Oh, dear God.
All right, real quick before we go, I'm very excited about the 12-12-12 concert. It just keeps getting bigger and better. It's going to be tomorrow night. It's going to be on about 35 television networks, not the broadcast networks, by the way. You're not going to see it on NBC and CBS, but you'll see it on VH1 and HBO and all sorts of other channels. It won't be hard to find. They're raising money to go directly to Hurricane Sandy victims. This is one of the greatest lineups that I have ever seen. I mean, just a fraction of the people who are going to be there include Bon Jovi, Eric Clapton, Dave Grohl.
Will Glenda be there?
I don't know about Glenda. I'm not sure about that. Billy Joel, Alicia Keys, Chris Martin, Bruce Springsteen, Eddie Vedder, Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, Kanye West, The Who, Paul McCartney, The Rolling Stones.
God, how long is this show?
I think it's supposed to be 4.5 hours. And honestly, I don't know what they have in terms of a set list or who's going to play when. But clearly, Springsteen's not going to go out there and do an hour if it's a 4.5 hour show. Starts 4:30 our time, by the way, the 12-12-12 concert, 4:30 West Coast time, and it's scheduled to go until 9 o'clock. But that's going to be super fun.
Yeah.
And Saturday night, the Rolling Stones, being in New York, are going to be having a pay-per-view concert. This is going to be the last show that's scheduled so far for this brief 50th anniversary, celebration they've been doing. It's going to be at the Prudential Center in New Jersey. The reason I bring it up is because special guests now are being announced for their show. And again, this is pay-per-view. You contact your cable company to find out how to get it. Bruce Springsteen on stage with the Rolling Stones. The Black Keys are going to be part of that concert. And Lady Gaga, too.
No kidding.
So that could be quite an evening, too.
Yeah,
so
that sounds great.
Very excited about both of those musical events coming up this year. Today's celebrity birthdays. How about Jermaine Jackson? Yes, from the Crazy Jackson family. He is 58 years old today. Bassist Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue turns 54. Gary Durden from CSI, 46 years old today. Monique from Precious, Academy Award winner, 44 years old today. Mos Def, great actor, by the way. Made his bones as a rapper, of course, but in recent years, we've seen him in things like Dexter and other shows. Just tremendous actor. 39 years old today. Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World, who may be in the reboot coming up next year, is 33 years old today. And actress Hallie Stenfield, who is the little girl in True Grit, is almost all grown up at 16, and that's the showbiz beat. Gotta all be gone on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. By the way, night number two of the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. That happens Sunday night. If you weren't there, you can watch it this morning starting at 10. Kevin's not here. Lisa, yes. We were watching some of yesterday's in the meeting yesterday in the office. How great did that look? I mean,
it looked amazing, yeah.
The sound was great, professionally shot. I can't believe that's a K-Rock production. Frankly, I was shocked by that. But if you want to see all the action from Sunday with Jack White and No Doubt, the surprise guest, Neon Trees, Passion Pit, The Killers, so much more, that's this morning at 10 o'clock. See it for free at krock.com. Well, we're getting into that magic time of year where we start to look back on the year that was. In this case, it's 2012. And this time, it's time for the top 10 beer mug moments of the year just passed.
The top beer mug interview moments. The top beer mug interview moments. The top beer mug interview moments. That's outrageous. When beer mug's on the case, you'll stick a microphone in your face. Questions, he's got none. He just yells, that is awesome. And when you think that is it, he says, fantastic! Yeah. Beer mug is such a stud. Oh no, I mean he's a dud. Top beer mug interview moments. Let's go.
I'm sorry we're out of time now. We don't have time to play that. Yeah, Beer Mug had another great year on the red carpet. And what I like about Beer Mug is he's not a one-trick pony. He figures out ways to embarrass himself, the show, and the station over and over and over again, but they're all completely different from one another. It's not like he's just making the same mistake over and over again. I'll give you an example. Here he is with John Cho. Do you remember what movie you were on the red carpet with John Cho this time around?
This was for Total Recall.
Total Recall. Yeah. John Cho was there. All right. So John Cho, who's a friend of the show, he's one of the Harold and Kumar guys. We love the dude. He's got a great sense of humor. He's kind enough to play along with Beer Mug's initial terrible first question.
One question. How distracting was it working alongside Beale and Beckinsale?
I got a wife, man.
Oh.
I got a wife.
All right. So I got
right
a wife.
There. You go back off, right?
Exactly. Not Beer Mug. He brings the hammer.
It's super distracting. They're really hot.
And so they dig the Asian guys, the Asian persuasion?
Now, why do you keep going with that line of questioning? You've clearly already made him uncomfortable with the wife comedy,
and
right?
Like Bean said, he played along.
Yes, he's very kind. He gave you an easy out.
Right. I got selfish.
And what do you want him to say to that question, by the way?
Yeah,
they sure wanted to have sex with you, didn't they, John Cho?
Yeah.
That's number 10. Here's number 9, and I love it when the person being interviewed throws it right back at Beer Mug, and that's what happened. Same night, by the way, Colin Farrell from Total Recall.
How much did you model your character after Arnold's character?
Oh, you know, just my pecs. Just my pecs and inner thigh. I thought, and
pretty shredded dude
there.
In your inner thigh.
I was in my inner thigh. No, I got in as good enough shape as I could in 4 months before we started shooting.
You're looking fantastic, sir.
Well, thank you very much, man. Thank you very much. It means the world coming from you.
Yeah, it sure does.
I love that.
Picture Colin Farrell, now picture Beer Mug, and you see why that's so funny that he said that back to you. Number 8, the top 10 Beer Mug moments of the year. This was, you had walked the moon. Where was this, Muggs? Do you remember?
This was at the MTV VMAs.
Yes, the VMAs. You were out there, a very hot day with lots of acts there. And apparently, I don't know whether you were distracted by who was walking by, but you wanted to make sure that Walk the Moon and Katy Perry somehow met. So you're talking to Walk the Moon. Katy Perry walks by near you, and here's how you decided to play that.
Hey, Katy Perry, Walk the Moon is standing right here. Katy Perry, Walk the Moon.
And it just went on and on and on from there. I don't know what you expected Katy Perry to do, why you thought she knew who Walk the Moon was, why you thought she'd care to meet them, but that wasn't the best use of their time to watch you scream at Katy Perry.
No, that was a spaz-out moment for me.
All right, so that was number 8. Number 7, here's a great question that you asked also at the same MTV event, Tyler Posey from the Teen Wolf show. Now, listen to this question and then think about what possible ways he might have to answer it.
Well, one last question before I let you go. How far do you see Teen Wolf going on MTV?
What do you want him to say to that?
Yeah, I didn't. That was all in all a bad question.
You caught up with Abby, who's the instructor on Dance Moms, and this one is particularly funny to me because apparently Dave spent a great deal of time telling you all about Dance Moms because you'd not seen it before, right? You didn't know who any of the people were or anything like that, so he told you that Abby is the older lady who teaches the little kids how to dance.
Right.
Well, that all went out the window when you got in front of her with your microphone.
Abby Lee Miller from Lifetime's Dance Moms. Here at the Teen Choice Awards, what is it like being a dance mom, being coined as a dance mom? Is that a good thing? Is
I'm
that
not a dance mom? Do you watch the show?
What are you?
I'm the dance teacher. I own the studio.
You have kids?
No.
I'm so sorry. She really wanted to hit me upside the head.
She's an angry woman to begin with. If you ever saw that show, you would know you don't want to cross her.
Right out the gate, right when she said, no, do you watch a show? I had a sinking feeling in my stomach. Like, oh, no.
As you should.
Number 5 of the greatest beer mug red carpet moments of 2012. This is one of my personal favorites because you caught up with Amy Teagarden, who, of course, was Coach Taylor's daughter on Friday Night Live.
Yes.
What movie was she in? Or was she at the same MTV event?
No, she was at the Project X red carpet.
Oh, Project X. Yeah. So you had a question, and again, I'm going to ask you this. Listen to Beer Mug's question and then think about how much time the world has left for her to answer it.
But there's a movie in the works.
Oh!
Fans can look forward to that.
Very nice. I have, honestly, and I don't want to hurt your feelings in any way, but I'm not a liar and I don't want to be fake, but I've never seen Friday Night Lights. So for a person who's never seen Friday Night Lights, maybe give me a little brief synopsis.
Oh, Muggs, my God.
That just went right there. That went from just totally rude to just even just disgustingly rude.
Look, I know it was on for 5 years, and it's not on anymore, but bring me up to speed on what I've missed with the story so far.
I believe you did that.
And I really didn't expect her to do that, so I don't know
why. Thank God!
Yeah, it was bad.
Poor lady. I'm sorry, Amy Teagarden. I'm so sorry. Number 4, Project X again. Director Todd Phillips. Again, listen to the question. Try to figure out how you expect him to answer it.
What kind of element that maybe the audience won't expect will happen in the movie? Can you give that away?
I was thinking about that, being like, that would be like asking, like, you know what? Give the ending away for everybody.
Yes,
why don't
yes.
you?
Hey, we hear there's a surprise cameo that's going to blow the audience's mind. Who is it? I mean, it's the same kind of thing. Why not just ask for every spoiler alert?
Yeah.
Could you screen the movie for me here on the red carpet before I go in to see it?
I'm surprised you didn't ask that.
All right, number three. This was at the Grammy roundtable, I think, earlier in the year in 2012. As we look at Beer Mug's greatest hits from the year, you sat down with the legendary band Kool & the Gang.
Yeah.
Now, this is the group that's famous for Celebration, famous for Ladies' Night. They have a dozen songs that people know, and Beer Mug was very excited to talk to Kool & the Gang about one of them.
All right, here at the Grammy Roundtable with Ronnie and Kool of none other than Kool & the Gang. How are you gentlemen doing?
Well, wonderful. How are you?
Fantastic. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of your biggest hits goes a little something like this. Do a little dance. Make a little love? Get down tonight?
No.
So you ended it as a question because you could see the look in their faces.
I sat down. I was like, okay, I'm gonna ask this question. I have no idea if it's right or not, but I'm just gonna go out the gates with it and see what happens. That's why I ended it with a question.
That's a great idea.
Well, I hope they enjoy the music of Casey and the Sunshine Band because that's what you're asking them to comment on.
Yeah, same thing.
Number two for Beer Mug in 2012. Again, you're gonna hear this and you're gonna go, how is there anything better than this? But this is the legendary Lou Ferrigno, who, of course, was the Incredible Hulk on TV. And Beer Mug had this as an opening question, which I think got the interview off on the right start.
At the Grammy Roundtable with none other than Mr. Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk himself. How you doing, Lou?
Good. Good afternoon.
How has life been for you up to today?
How is that a question for a 65-year-old man?
And considering I only had about 5 minutes to spend with him, and then he was going to be carted off to the next table.
I could round up my life in 5 minutes. Sure, not a problem.
How has life been up till today?
Like, what does their face look like after you lay a bomb like that
on
them?
That is my brain improvising very poorly.
Do they just look confused or disgusted? Yeah. Or...
Lou Ferrigno at that point was wishing he didn't read lips. That's what was happening. All right, number one, and this was very, very difficult for us to even cut down because the whole 4 minutes is priceless. But here's a couple of highlights. Beer Mug on the red carpet for Coma, which was the remake of the book and then the movie, and now it's a miniseries starring the great Oscar winner Richard Dreyfuss. I mean, talk about a legend. Here's a guy we've never had on the show. Beer Mug gets a chance to talk to Richard Dreyfuss. Does he blow it? Do you know Beer Mug?
Back to Coma. Did you watch the original film, and did you take anything away, or did you just kind of...
I saw the original film when it came out, but that's 30 years ago.
By the way, listen to the disgusting Richard Dreyfuss's voice. He hates... being there.
There is
he
no,
hates having to do this interview.
No patience
and
in his voice.
He hates stupid interviewers. Yeah.
He hates Beer Mug more than anything. And Beer Mug is just flailing. Listen as he just tries to come up with questions for Richard Dreyfuss.
And so you just kind of went into this project, this 4-hour miniseries, kind of with your own take? Or And do you play the doctor?
Now he's just guessing. Now he doesn't have any questions. Just throw in, see what hits the wall, see what sticks. You play the doctor?
I play the creator of the Institute.
Oh. Very excited.
Painful. Not half as excited as I am.
Now, at that moment, I mean, if he had a weapon, he'd be using it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the worst experience of his showbiz life. Not half as excited as I am. Beer Mug brings it home, though, even after that.
Well, Richard, thank you for your time. You are truly one of my inspirations. I'm not an actor, but comedic-wise. Like, I mean, you take serious roles, comedic roles, but, I mean, that's the arts right there. You know, laughter, sad, cry.
Yes, it is. It's laughter, sad, and cry, ladies and gentlemen.
God,
great Beer Mug.
Yes.
And his top 10 moments of 2012. The top interview moments. That's outrageous. There's Weezer. That's a band I actually miss when they don't have a new record out. I love them so much. Island in the Sun here on K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ, M83, and Smashing Pumpkins coming up. Lisa, you get a chance to watch that Howie Mandel Take It All show, I think it's what it's called, on NBC last night?
No.
Crazy show.
No, I didn't. Tell me about
Talk
it.
Talk to Howie coming up in about 10 minutes or so right here on the camera. I'll let Howie tell you about it.
All
How
right.
about that? First, though, I only have a couple of minutes here, but I have to tell you this story because how does this happen? Help me. This is Lisa Splains People to Bean.
All right.
Tell me how this happens. Here are, I'm sure there's a lawsuit that's happening. Stockton, California, there's a restaurant up there called Chili D's Sports Lounge. Three young ladies go in to have lunch. Their names are Christine, Christina, and Isabel. And on the bill, when the bill arrives, and we've seen stories like this before where something offensive is written on the bill. When the bill arrives, they see the words fat girls written on their check.
What?
So they call over the waiter and they say, hey, really? Fat girls? What's happening here? And he says, oh, I don't know anything about that. Don't have anything to do with that. That must be Jeff, the guy up at the counter or something like that. He must have typed that in there for some reason. So they call the manager over, and the manager says, well, he apologizes, but they said that he had a smirk on his face like it was funny and he was trying not to laugh. Apparently what happened is this is how the guy who was putting the orders in identified which table the orders went to.
Don't they have numbers? I've worked in restaurants. You number the tables.
That's what I thought.
You don't go guy with bad haircut and fat chick with stupid glasses.
How do you decide that you're going to put fat girls on the check and think that that's going to fly? Like, who would do that?
I can't believe that they're actually doing it on the check.
I can't believe it either. But, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think this is clearly a case where most restaurants would have table 18 on the check. They would have, you know, family with eight kids, you know, or whatever it is. Somebody, they want the waiter to know where to take the food. But it's just crazy. So, naturally, there is talk of a lawsuit, okay?
Yeah.
And the reason I bring this whole story up is, look, I see these girls in the news piece. They're not thin, okay? Yet they still deserve to be able to go into a restaurant and not be singled out as fat girls. They still deserve to not have that on the check. That's uncool. What's the damage here?
I would never sue for something like that. But I would demand like free meals for the next 3 months. That's what they should get.
Well, depending on how big the girls are, the restaurant might not be able to afford free meals for this group. Listen to what the manager said, by the way. He offered a discount of 25%, and they said no. And then he offered half off. He offered 50%. By the way, everybody in this story is irritating to me. Obviously, Jeff, who did the wrong thing to begin with by writing fat girls on the bill. I'm no fan of this manager. If you're the manager and you realize that your customers are upset by this fat girls thing happening, you want to make sure it goes away. You want to make sure this doesn't come back and end up in a lawsuit or end up going higher up into the corporate chain. You want to make these girls happy, right?
Yes.
You offer exactly what you said, Lisa. Not only am I going to pay for your meal today, but you, please, come back every day for the next week and we'll take care of you.
Here's some gift cards. Yes. You can use it. Give it to friends. Because honestly, I probably wouldn't want to go back there as the fat girl.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
But give me gift cards. I can give them to friends or something.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see whether a lawsuit happens. If it did, I want to ask, what do you think the actual damage is to these girls? They got their feelings hurt. And by the way, we've had this discussion before. They know that they're fat girls. So it's not like it was news to them. But still, again, uncool that they were called that in a restaurant where they were, you know, given their hard-earned money to pay. What's the damage to them? What are they owed, if anything?
Well, I think whatever it costs to be in Jenny Craig for a year. Good. Something along those lines. $5,000.
We'll keep a close eye on this story and see what happens. Howie Mandel's got another brand new show in primetime on NBC. We'll talk to him next right after this in the World Famous Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, 106.7 KROQ for a Tuesday. A lot of great stuff coming up. Our friend Kevin Smith swings by in just a few minutes. Comedian Eddie Ift on the program today. The great Ray Romano. Actually, Lisa, why so much comedy on one show? I feel like we should have spread this out a little bit today.
I know, I agree.
Because Howie Mandel, also one of our faves, back on the phone on the Kevin Amin Show. Hey, Howie, how are you, man?
I seem to be doing okay on this all-comedy Tuesday.
Yes, you do. We got the pitch from your people a couple of weeks ago in the meeting. They said, Howie Mandel, he's got a new show. We said, we love Howie. We'll take Howie. We don't even know what the show is. We'll take Howie. And then last night, I tune in to Take It All, which premiered on NBC, and I saw you say something that I couldn't believe, Howie. Let me play the clip.
Stay right where you are. You have to get ready for the most thrilling moment of television you will ever witness.
The most thrilling moment of television you will ever witness.
What?
And you might have been right. You might have been right. It was
the end moment.
Yes.
The end of the game is it's so bizarre to be standing there, let alone sitting on your couch watching it. And for those that don't know, it ends with I'll just take it through if there's a listener.
Yes, please do.
And there's got to be many that didn't see it last night. It's on again tonight after The Voice and all week long on NBC. It's based on Secret Santa, where people come out and they get to pick five. It starts with five. They get to pick gifts, but bigger than the ones you get at your office party. They could be cars. They could be experiences. They could be hovercrafts. They could be, they're crazy gifts. Whoever ends up, and they could steal from each other, whoever ends up with the least valuable prize gives it back and goes home. Until the end, where two people have accumulated hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and prizes. And then they face off against each other, their hands on an iPad. They have a choice. They can either click in and lock in, keep mine, or take it all. And I give them a moment to talk amongst themselves and to play the ultimate game of poker, because they could be bluffing, they could be lying, but they convince each other, try to convince each other,
I'm just
going to keep mine, I'm a single father, I'm a teacher, this is all I want books for my kids, you got to trust me, just let's both lock in, keep mine, and we can go home with the hundreds of thousands of dollars we all have. And then when you feel like they've convinced each other, I say lock it in, and then maybe what they said wasn't true. They might click over to take it all. If they click over to take it all and one of them does, then they take all their presents, they take all their opponent's presents, their opponent ends up with nothing, and the lady last night walked out with over $400,000 in cash and prizes, and all the other guys' gifts too. If they both decided to take it all, they both would have ended up with nothing. If they both would have done what they said they were going to do, and keep in mind, they both would have walked out with hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, this is evil.
It is evil. And Howie is stoking the fire, too, because he's talking to these finalists last night, Kim and John. And by the way, John is a sweet old man who looks exactly like Santa Claus, right, Howie?
Santa Claus. Yes,
and you're like, hey, you know you can lie. You know, it's fine to lie. Go ahead and lie. I mean, this is what's fascinating about this. And I mocked you for promoting it as the greatest thing you'll ever see on television. But that final 5 minutes is everything you need to know about humanity in one, like, tightly wrapped package, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it is a social experiment, and we've done seven of them, and I'll tell you, they all end differently, and it's about who you are, and, you know, you can play along live on this thing called Z-Box, and you can win money for doing it, so you can guess whether, you know, just like John had to do, you could look into somebody's eyes, and if you don't trust them or you don't think what they're saying is real, you know, ultimately, people are saying it's evil or it's brutal, but truth be told, if you go play poker, and, you know, you got nothing in your hand and you double down and then everybody matches it and then eventually they go out and you take the pot. Is that evil?
Nope. It's exactly, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
I think it's
about reading people. And it's also about, you know, I know the show airs, you know, it's an hour long show. There's probably, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes of content, but it probably takes a couple of hours to film each one of those, I would imagine, Howie. So these people are in the trenches. They're soldiers. They kind of are having the same experiences. There's some bonding going on. They start to kind of feel like they know each other. Maybe they even like each other. Maybe they're even kind of rooting for each other. The flip side of that coin is they're definitely opponents, and there is only one, you know, potentially one winner at the end. And you're right. I mean, it's everything that's good and everything that's bad about people. And I can't imagine what it
would. These are consenting adults who have signed up to play a game.
Right.
You know, it is a game. And if you play the game, you know, and she played the game.
She walked out with over
$400,000.
And there are some people who just don't have the stomach to be a villain on national TV. They feel like, look, the pressure's on. I'm going to look like a bad person if I pull this maneuver. But on the other hand, there are plenty of people who say exactly what you said, which is, you know, like the people, you know, Johnny Fairplay on Survivor. Great example. I'll do whatever I have to do to win the game because that's why we're all here. And that's what makes this fascinating, Howie. So
yes,
the plan
I agree.
Is.
And that's
the plan
why
is,
I said yes to it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because I know you get offered a ton of game shows, and I know that you were, you know, you're waiting for just the right one to get back with it. The plan is you air it
to the right one.
Five nights this week, right? Every night this week on NBC, and then again on Monday, and then after that we see what happens?
We'll see what happens.
You know,
it sounds fascinating.
It is fascinating, and I'm telling you what, the end of that thing, I mean, the audience is standing up and they're screaming, Howie.
Sure.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that on a game show.
It's amazing.
I've
never seen anything like this or been, you know, in a room with anything like this. And, you know, I go on Twitter live at Howie Mandel and you just watching the reactions live on Twitter. I mean, it sounds like people were screaming at home and going, oh my God, and everything from I love this and crazy, this is the wildest thing I've seen, to this is brutal and this is wrong and this is, you know, people get very emotional, and that's the kind of television I like to do. Very visceral, you know, reactive kind of TV that takes no skill, no stunts.
Yep.
You know, anybody can play this game.
Well, it's absolutely worth checking out
how they play.
And Howie described it best in the article in the Hollywood Reporter. I think he said, The Price is Right meets Deal or No Deal meets Jerry Springer. So you want to check it out tonight at 9 on NBC. Take It All is the name of the program. Howie, we love having you on the show, man. Have a wonderful holiday season. Let's do this again next year, my friend.
Thank you.
Hey, Lisa, our last chance to catch up with our friend Kevin Smith before the holidays. He joins us after the top of the hour here on Carrick. Lot to talk about with Mr. Smith back in the news talking about Clerks 3. So that should be cool. 6:53 now. It's Tuesday. Ralph is out. Lisa's here with the Showbiz Beat. What's going on, Lise?
This is...
Yo, tell me what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Why?
Tell me what I want, what I really, really want.
That's the Spice Girls.
It is.
What the hell are you talking about?
You know I love me some theater. So the Spice Girls musical Viva Forever is opening in London tonight. Baby, Sporty, Scary, Ginger, and Posh are all going to be there at the London's Piccadilly Theatre. It should be very exciting. And that's one of the songs that will be in the musical. But it was written by this comedian, Jennifer Saunders. Maybe you remember her from the sitcom Absolutely Fabulous. Mm-hmm. You know those really drunk blonde chicks that dress like crazy? She's very funny. So when I first heard this, I thought, but she's great. So this could be really good.
It is weird how 90s nostalgia is just in full effect right now.
Yeah, it's true. And it's definitely hitting the stages. So I imagine it'll come to New York and then hopefully to LA if it does well. So we've been talking about Adderall a little bit the last few weeks because a lot of football players have been testing positive for Adderall, which is an ADHD. Is that how you say ADHD?
That's right.
Drug? Yeah. But I've heard over the years a lot of celebrities use it because it makes you skinny. But... when you come off it, it is brutal. Like, you're so depressed. Life just doesn't feel like it's worth living. It's a really kind of horrible drug. And Brooke Mueller apparently has been using Adderall inappropriately and was rushed to the hospital last week. And she acknowledged that she had taken way too many Adderall pills.
Hey, there are people who take it just because they're busy or they've got a schedule.
They need
to
stay awake and
they need to stay awake.
And
they just power on. I mean, isn't it like drinking a million cups of coffee? It's one of those kind of deals,
right?
It
is. And it's more than that because I think then you also feel really good and positive and you don't have any appetite. It's just the coming down part that's so terrible. So
it's
anyway,
weird that you'd go to rehab for Adderall, but I guess anything that affects your body like that, I guess.
I mean, it's like any of those prescription drugs.
The way
it's addictive.
The way I see Adderall, and I've actually taken it and been prescribed it. It's pharmaceutically supported speed.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So she checked into rehab. Her attorney says she was uncomfortable with the way it was making her feel. Her attorney also said she had no illegal drugs in her system when she OD'd last week. So the spin begins.
TMZ says that this is her 19th trip to rehab, by the way.
Yes, that's what. But you know what? It kicks in at some point, right? People do go like 20, 25 times, and then finally one time it sticks. So
you should get a free time at 20, by the way. Don't you
get a punch card?
Yeah.
That's a great idea. All right, so Shannon Doherty did something nice.
No.
Right?
Brenda from 90210 did something nice.
A little shocked. This was over the weekend. One of her Twitter followers in New Jersey was suicidal and tweeted that to her, said that she was threatening to shoot herself. And Shannon got very concerned and actually called the police. And I love what she said, the dispatcher. She said, my name is Shannon Doherty and I'm an actress. I am on Twitter, sadly. And there's a girl that is threatening to shoot herself. And she lives somewhere over there. And I don't know what to do. And so they actually sent the police to the woman's house. And she was okay. And I guess she's going to get the help she needs. And Shannon said she was like freaking out and feeling like she's being held hostage until she found out that everything was okay, but they did let her know that she was
okay.
That
would be a pretty scary situation to be in if you're having a conversation online with somebody and then they're threatening to commit suicide. Because on the one hand, you feel like you have an obligation to do something, and you do, by the way. But on the other hand, you're Shannon Doherty. You got to deal with nut jobs all the time, crazy fans who say crazy things. How do you even know what's true and what's
not?
Well, and
she said that her security guys told her to just block the woman because she's nuts, which a lot of people would just do that. But she actually did make the
call.
Lisa's
been
which
blocking you
cool.
left and right on Twitter, people. Let me tell you that.
I have blocked one person.
Don't cross Lisa, man. Don't say the wrong thing to Lisa. Get blocked.
Hayden Panettiere back on the market, boys.
By the way, Hayden Panettiere, who we used to have conversations all the time when Mike was here, about her not being hot.
Yes.
She has become hot. I got news for everybody. If you're not watching her on Nashville, she has become hot.
She looks great. And she's a really good actress.
Yeah, I like her too. Yeah. Very much.
So she was dating, I didn't know who this was, but he's actually a New York Jets wide receiver, Scotty McKnight. And so they've broken up, but they're going to be friends. So that's all good.
Well, that's how celebrities do it. There's no hard feelings when you break up. It's always the best for both people.
And so I'm really, really happy for them. And but this is a big day for Hayden and for Connie Britton from Nashville because their soundtrack is coming out. It's the Nashville soundtrack. It's called Music of Nashville. And if you haven't been watching Nashville, I know a lot of people hate country. Ralph hates country, but even he said that the music on this show is really good, and they use it in the right way. You know, they don't, like, jam in songs that they don't need. It's used very organically, and it's great music.
Yeah.
Really good music.
It really is. And it's got, I mean, T-Bone Burnett, of course, is one of the greatest record producers. He's got a phenomenal ear for music. He's the one who's picking all the songs. There's lots of new songs, a few covers, too, but you're absolutely right. It's not, and it's not super country, either.
I no,
think it's
that's
country
true.
That's palatable for maybe rock listeners, too.
Well, and I can't believe that Connie Britton and Hayden are singing.
Yes.
They're so good. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Listen to this. Covered up, but still I know the secret of the life you're guilty of. The smoking gun is what I found. The dirt I have on you is a ground. That's Connie Britton.
Yeah.
That's buried under. It's such a good song. So I'm really excited. I'm going to get it.
It is amazing how they were able to find so many actors for this show that can also play guitar and can also sing. I mean, that must have been a pretty challenging casting call. But it's the biggest new show of the season. And so if you haven't checked it out yet, you definitely should.
And there's a couple of other CDs out. Trey by Green Day comes out today. We haven't heard a lot about that lately, but that's coming
out.
They're
not actually in the promoting mode right now,
no,
are they?
No, it's a shame. If anyone's still watching Glee, the music, the Christmas album Volume 3 is out. Vicious Lies and Dangerous Rumors by Big Boy and Jesus Peace by The Game. There's some DVDs. Ted is out today. If you haven't seen that, starring Ralph Garman, it's really good. The Bourne Legacy, which I never saw, with Jeremy Renner, that's out today.
Nice.
Oh, and on DVD, TV, Girls.
There you go.
Yes,
the first season of Girls, finally out today.
So good. If you did not see that, you have to do yourself a favor. It's just an amazing show with Lena Dunham. We have celebrity birthdays. Bassist Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue, 54. Monique from Precious is 44. Zachy, Vengeance of Avenged Sevenfold is 31. And Haley Steinfeld from True Grit is 16. And that's the Showbiz Beat.
Hey, don't forget, this morning at 10 o'clock, you can watch all the action from night number 2 of the sold-out 23rd annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas show from Sunday night at the Gibson Amphitheater. You can see it online free at krock.com starting at 10 o'clock. You get to see The Killers, Jack White, and all the great bands on the bill. Hey, this is great news. It's the return of The Kevin and Bean Show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes!
What I like to call it the new Kevin and Bean Show.
Sure, exactly. How are you, dude?
Excellent.
Long time no see. I don't remember the last time I talked to you.
I was in, I felt like a couple months back or something like
that. Yeah, it's been about a couple months. Too long.
It's the holiday season. I was talking to Ralph. He was over the other day. We were recording a podcast at the house. I said, hey, man, like, I'm leaving. At this point, I'm going to Toronto late tonight. I said, maybe I could come in to K-Rock, do the last. This is my last time I could be here before the end of the year. And he was like, oh, that'll be amazing. I'll totally be there. And I show up here. This is like a real, like, Sleepless in Seattle kind of moment. Like, it's almost like Ralph just wanted us all to be together without Ralph or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what the ulterior motive is here, but it's very weird. We're losing people. We're limping to the finish line of 2012. We can barely put a show together anymore. We don't have enough guys to field a baseball team anymore, Kevin.
I feel like this is part of the NHL hockey lockout. Like, suddenly there's nobody here to play the game. Can I ask you guys this question?
Yeah.
Who hasn't seen a Charlie Brown Christmas? Anybody?
No one in America hasn't seen the
De rigueur viewing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's something that your parents start showing you when you're a little kid because it's a classic.
Yeah. And to be fair, for those of us who grew up in that era, we didn't have all the options that everyone has now where it's like you could watch, you know, any number of children's programming channels dedicated to kids. When we were growing up, it was between the hours of this and this and this and this. So when they put something that was like geared toward a child on television, It might as well have been the last episode of MASH or the coronation of somebody or a president getting inaugurated. in the world of children because you were like, oh, my Lord, they're giving some broadcast time to us. You didn't say broadcast time when you were five.
No.
But you know, you got that idea.
But it must see
TV. Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely must see TV. And that kind of thing's gone away a little bit over the years, but or a lot.
You watch that. You watch The Grinch.
Every holiday, if when you were a kid, you had this to watch on TV. Saturday mornings. Right. If they did a Sunday movie of the week that was like Jaws or something like that, something that wasn't like network, because when you were a kid, you're like, they're talking. It's adults talking. I want to see a movie. That's a shark. And then if you waited for your holidays, because then you would get Valentine's Day specials like from Charlie Brown. You'd get the Thanksgiving specials, the Easter.
Now, why is Charlie Brown on your mind today? What's Halloween. The deal here? Because I know it was on last week.
My wife came into my office last night. Now, you know, and this isn't bragging, but I do smoke a lot of weed. So I was like, maybe this didn't happen, but I checked this morning and it absolutely happened, and it has me questioning my entire relationship with her. She comes into my office, she closes the door like in a very surreptitious fashion, as if she's going to tell me some house gossip. So I think she's going to tell me about my kid or something like that. And she comes over, she sits down, she's like, what is the story of a Charlie Brown Christmas? And I was just like, what do you mean? You want to watch it? She goes, no, but I put up a tweet where I referenced like Carly bought a tree. We went to get trees, and she bought this little weak-ass tree. She's like, nobody's ever going to buy it. So she bought it. And when Jen tweeted that story, they're like, oh, she's Charlie Brown. So my wife came into my office going like, I think they're insulting our child.
Oh,
calling her,
no.
Calling her a bald loser. And I was like, what? I was like, Charlie Brown is like, I said, look, her father's the bald loser. Charlie Brown is an American icon. He's been around for 60 years. And she's like, well, why do people like him? She's like, explain.
She hasn't seen any Charlie Brown at all?
At that moment in time, I swear to you, I was sitting there going, she's a sleeper agent. Like, there's no way
she
is. Yes, there's no way she is who she says she's been all this time.
She's never seen The Great Pumpkin.
I'm now putting into question if she's cheated on me, if the kid's mine. Everything is a question.
Everything is a question, yes.
How do you not see that?
Check her phone and see if there's anyone named Abu Nuzir in her phone. That sounds likely at this point.
It's, how do you not see a Charlie Brown Christmas?
That's unbelievable.
Or, strike that. How do you not, like, look, some people are like, I don't like the peanuts and whatnot. How do you not, at least on some level, commiserate with Charlie Brown? Like, who doesn't identify, with the exception of, like, Johnny Depp, who doesn't identify with Charlie Brown? We've all lost, you know, sooner or later.
Sure.
You always kind of, somebody pulls the football away from you as you go to kick it. But apparently, in the world of my wife, not at all.
That's very bizarre.
She's Lucy, dude. That's what I'm figuring
and by
out.
By the way, and you brought up a perfect example. You mentioned the pulling the football away. Even people who don't read the comic strip, everybody knows that expression, right? Everybody knows at least that one line of thing that happened in the Peanuts is that Charlie Brown always got fooled by Lucy holding the football and then pulling away at the last minute. It's just become part of the language, just like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree has become kind of a thing that people know about. Because it's – I mean, that's a sweet moment. That's a compliment to say that your daughter had the good taste to save that little tree that nobody else would want.
That's what I was trying to explain to her. I was like, that's nice. That means they're telling us that our kid has all the heart of Charlie Brown. And she's like, a boy? Like, she's got real gender issues. She's like, why do I care about this boy? And I was like, look, the Peanuts were always kind of gender balanced. You know, for every boy, there was a girl. I was like, don't worry. It's not like boys with toys. Like, she's, you know, always coming down. I watched Batman. She was laughing at me the other night. I put in Dark Knight Rises, and she walked in the room, and I'm watching, like, the battle, the fight between Batman and Bane. And, you know, he's just like, Bane. And she just starts laughing out loud.
Well,
she was
with her on that.
Oh, man. She wouldn't leave me alone. Like, I was like, look, I said, I'm not going to apologize for that voice. I didn't create it. That's the choice he made as an actor. I said, but this is a pretty cool sequence because he's going to break his back. And look at him fighting. Look at how he's putting his all into beating this dude, and he can't do it, man. Like, Bane is his physical equal. Maybe not his intellectual, but even in this instance, perhaps. And I'm laying it out metaphorically. And then all of a sudden, Batman speaks again, like, rah, rah, rah. And she just starts cracking up. I was like, all right, I can't defend the voice. But the rest of the movie is pretty bad.
You tell her that taking that movie away from you would be like taking the blanket away from Linus, but then she won't get that
she
reference.
Would have no
She's
idea.
Not going to get that
You're
reference.
You're going to make her
no
watch
idea.
It, right?
She wouldn't do it last night. I was like, this is the perfect time. I was baked. I was like, we must watch this. We'll grab the kid, watch as a family.
Because your daughter
should
see it, too. Yeah,
She's
absolutely.
Seen it. That's the weird thing. Okay. She's seen it, like, so many times. But Jen had, I guess, the common phraseology of a Charlie Brown tree, having seen the image perhaps on the VHS box or a DVD cover or something like that. And that's about as far as it went with her.
You know what's really interesting to me is that the last few years, and I don't know if this says anything about where we are as America or the times that we live in or it's the recession or what, but the last few years, the ratings have been crazy good for the Charlie Brown Christmas. I mean, it beat the X Factor the other night when it was on, for instance, you know, and it's a 45-year-old animated show that's very religious. It is interesting that it still has the appeal that it does in this cynical 21st century America, isn't it?
And it's but don't you readily think it's people available
like
too.
Us who want to watch that again because it's reminiscent of
no, I think it's everybody.
And
I mean, I think people are still handing that one down to their kids. I think it is a classic.
I think it ages well, whereas yeah. back in the day, too. People used to hand down, what was the black and white? It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
You can't really hand that one down because kids are like, what happened? Where'd the color go? What is this? Is this a Clerks sequel? So you can't really hand that one down. But the cartoon is timeless. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. It doesn't really, aside from the jazz, which is also kind of timeless, doesn't really mark it in any particular era. The one thing that is, you know, nice about it, but at the same time, a little bit weird in this day and age, we're a more secular world right now, dead in the middle of it. They drop a spotlight on Linus, and he reads from the Bible.
Yes.
That's, I don't remember that.
He flat out reads, you know, and lo, there were shepherds. Like, reads a whole passage
from
the Bible.
That's the best part of the whole show,
You would never see that today on network TV. Yeah. There's maybe a reference to, like, you know, if there's some spiritual meaning to this season, and then they'll leave it at that. But nobody flat out goes, whip out your Bibles, kids. Here we go. It's weird.
No. That's a beautiful moment, and I don't know who that little kid was who played Linus, but the way his voice cracks, oh my God, it gets me every time. I love that.
I worked with one of the Sallys. I forget which Sally she said she was, which era she was. She wasn't the Christmas one. Hillary Momberger, she was a script supervisor when I worked with her on Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back. And the script supervisor sits next to the director most times, and usually, back in the day, it was in a little chair, so I always used to call it the little chair club. But now they kind of sit in chairs of the same size and stuff like that. And now that the budgets are so low, there are no chairs. But the
they stand
right there. Script supervisor's job is to go over the script, every moment in the script, line in the script, make sure everything's being done correctly. Carol Banker, who was my first script supervisor on Mallrats, was really the person that was my first kind of film school teacher. I'd made Clerks without knowing about stuff like crossing the access. There's a line that you're shooting across when you're working in film that if you've ever seen a movie where it's like, hey man, that person doesn't seem they're looking in the right direction. Mm. They seem to be looking off. That's crossing the axis. On Clerks, we got lucky. There wasn't a lot of cutting, so there was a lot of singles. So it was just long shots, so we didn't have to worry about crossing the axis too much. There's one scene where the guy's given Dante a summons for selling cigarettes to a kid toward the end of the movie where the eye lines maybe get a little wonky. And the worst example of it in Clerks is Dante looking at Jay and Silent Bob at the end of the movie over the counter. Like, those are some of the only scenes where we actually cut. Rest of it is just long single takes. So I didn't have to learn about crossing the axis until Mallrats. And Carol Banker, who sat next to me in a little chair, literally taught me about, like, you have to do this. Like, the line is this. Like, she's a better director and still remains a better director than I was and still am because she taught me stuff that I didn't absolutely know.
Besides, how did we get on this tangent, Kevin?
I don't know, but it's interesting.
Aside from the job of actually helping you keep your line straight, they keep the dialogue straight as well, which in the case of a writer-director, somebody who writes a script and is very anal about, you got to do the dialogue and all the dialogue right, you need that person even more so because at the end of the take, you're watching the performance. At the end of the take, you could turn to the continuity person and be like, how close is that? Were they off? Right. Did they miss a line? Anything important information? So Carol Banker did that for most of my career. Hillary Momberger did it for Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back because Carol went to direct. She was working on that X-Files spinoff. What was it called? Lone Gunman. Anyway,
she was a Sally.
Hillary Momberger was a Sally. I'm sitting next to her on the set one day and we're chit-chatting, you know, getting to know her and stuff. And I was like, so you always done little chair? And she's like, nah, you know, back in the day I was a voice artist. And I was like, what? What do you mean? She was like, I was on the Peanuts. I was Sally. And my head shattered. because I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, somebody does those voices when they're kids. I was one of those kids. Amazing. So at the end of the show, she gives me a cell somebody drew of Cartoon Jay and Silent Bob standing with Sally, which I had hanging in my kid's room. And then one day when my kid was like 2 years old, she looked up and finally put it together. She'd been watching the Peanuts, unlike my wife. At a young age there, she is watching the Charlie Brown stuff. She looks up, sees a picture, a cartoon picture, but a picture to her in her two-year-old mind of Jay and Silent Bob, her dad and her Uncle Jay, standing with Sally from the Peanuts. She stared at it for hours. She was like a little kid in Close Encounters because she's trying to figure it out. She's like, how do you know
that? How do these worlds collide?
Yeah, why is your head round?
I have to be honest when I tell you I did not think you're going to be able to save that story, Kevin.
Thank you, sir. That's my job, man. I'm a podcaster.
We are going to be right back. So much to get to with Kevin Smith. Obviously, we invited him because Clerks 3 is all anyone's talking about, but there's so much more. There's a super groovy cartoon movie for Jay and Silent Bob we want to talk about. Kevin and Ralph have New Year's Eve plans we'll tell you about. And so much more all coming right back after this on the World Famous K-Rock. You're listening to the World Famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ for a Tuesday. Our old friend Kevin Smith in studio with us. Hey, Kev.
Hey, man.
You and Ralph Garman are doing the New Year's Babel Eve for the third year in a row. You're going to be New Year's Eve, December 31st at the Lovitz. Tickets are on sale now for that. That's a fun night, right?
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I like your version, man. New Year's Babel Eve, where me and Ralph get in the ring, duke it out, shirts and skins.
So tickets are on sale now. First floor seating, $95. Third floor standing room, only $75. You do anything special for New Year's besides, drink and smoke and countdown?
There's a contest where I can't even say what the award is that gets given out by Mr. Ralph Garman. There's some special things. We crown a king and queen of sorts, and I can't even say what that title is.
Wow.
It's pretty vulgar.
This is an adults-only show.
Yeah, I can't. I was just going like, maybe my mom will come out. She can't come to this.
No.
She'd be like, what have I done?
If you're looking for something for New Year's Eve, 21 and up, you want to go to thelovitz.com to buy your tickets for that. All right, let's talk about why you made the news last week, and it was everywhere. People started seeing the words Clerks and the number 3 together.
That's weird. Did it travel?
It was a big deal, man.
I don't keep my finger on that stuff anymore. I mean,
don't have a Kevin Smith Google alert?
I'm just Twitter, man. I'm pretty much Twitter all the way. And I saw lots of reaction on my Twitter feed, but that makes sense because
those are your people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I figure those would be the only cats that would care, particularly because to me, it wasn't really huge news. I'd known about it, of course, for months, but even when I tweeted it, I didn't think like, oh man, this is going to rock everyone's socks.
I'm surprised.
But I'd already been musing about like a Clerks 3 in form of like, I was talked about one point, hey, maybe we'll do it as a musical. Like, it was kind of in the ether. But I guess just solidifying it made it, I don't know, tangible.
But
for
hadn't
people.
You already said that the hockey movie was going to be your final movie?
I had been talking about that. That to me was the bigger news. Like, I was like, hey, man, that hockey movie I've been talking about, I'm going to do it as a miniseries. And I didn't tell them where we're going to do it yet. We're going to wait until let the network announce it. But I can't. Unfortunately, there's some things I'm not allowed to share, like stuff that I don't control.
Okay.
So in that world, I felt like, hey, hit somebody. My last movie is going to be a television miniseries. That I felt was kind of the bigger news. And we announced that on our Jay and Silent Bob Get Old podcast, episode 99, the one we did from Edmonton in honor of Gretzky. So that kind of got out first. But then what I saw was a lot of people on Twitter piecing it together going, wait, if Hit Somebody was supposed to be your last movie and now it's a miniseries, that means your last movie slot's open. And before people started going...
No kidding.
Before people started campaigning for it, I was like, all right, I know what it's going to be, so I might as well just tell them. So for me, it was going, look, my last movie is going to be Clerks. I'm not saying it's happening today. I'm not saying it's happening tomorrow, but the last one's going to be Clerks. And then we did a podcast this weekend, me and Ralph was doing Jingle Bob. What was the thing you guys did this weekend?
Acoustic Christmas.
So we couldn't do Hollywood Babylon. So Ralph came over Sunday morning and we did this kind of a Hollywood Babylon giant size annual. We call it like an emergency edition of Babylon, where it was me and Ralph and Scott Mosier, my Smodcast partner and my Clerks producer. And we kind of laid out the whole story.
I got to check that out.
It's like 2 hours. It'll tell you everything. And it's a lot of it's tied up with the Weinsteins and kind of twisted. And it's a really fascinating listen. If you're into film, you don't even have to like Kevin Smith or Clerks or any of that nonsense. If you're just into film and you're interested in the process of filmmaking, how financing happens anymore, that episode, the most recent episode of Hollywood Babylon, is a must listen. It's like a free film school.
That's cool.
Clerks 3, is the reason you want to do it just because you like the symmetry of That's How I Started, That's How I'm Going Out? Or is there something about those characters that you have always felt was unfinished?
I love those characters. When I did Clerks, it was about, hey, these guys represent what I felt like to be in my 20s. When I wound up doing Clerks 2, it was because I felt like I had something to say about being in my 30s, and I felt the best way to do it was with those guys, the guys that started me, Dante and Randall, or Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson, the actors. So when we announced, hey, we're going to do Clerks 2, naturally there was a bunch of like, yeah, this is retarded, dumb, you shouldn't do this, this is bad. A lot of people shouting it down, a lot of people, even Jeff Anderson, who played Randall in Clerks and in Clerks 2, was like, dude, we really need to do this? He's going, look, I don't know much in life, but I know that people like this movie Clerks that we did, and it's nice.
Yeah. And sequels often are disappointing and kind of screw up the memory, right?
That was his philosophy. He was just like, we don't need to. Why bother? And I was like, I got this story to tell. Like, you don't need to, and we don't need to do it for the money, thank God, but I need to, because if I don't tell a story, it's stuck in my head and heart all this time. So we did Clerks 2, and it really worked out, and folks, you know, there are definitely some folks, and I've seen them on Twitter recently with the news of Clerks 3, who are like, don't go all soft with it like you did Clerks 2. None of this singing and love stuff. And I was like, yeah, because the original Clerks was about going around kicking pregnant women or something. I was like, it wasn't hard edge. That had heart as well. So when we talk about doing Clerks 3, it all right now hinges on, first, I have a story to tell. I have an idea about something to say about what it's like to be in my 40s. Judd Apatow is doing one at Christmas, right, called This Is 40. Of course, Clerks 3 will be decidedly different. It isn't about people.
It won't
that
have
succeed.
Megan Fox in it. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I promise you, for many reasons. So, in any event, that is me having something to say about being in my 40s. But more so than that, Clerks 3 is really about it's summing up the entire film career. It's a movie that's about loving movies. And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is a movie about making movies. Like, you could see me running out of original things to say because I just start making movies about making movies. This is a movie that's kind of like, if you've ever seen the Italian film Cinema Paradiso, that's kind of what I'm going for, man. A movie that really sums up why I did this, why I went on this ridiculous journey that became Clerks, Clerks 2, and now Clerks 3.
Forgive me if this is a question you've already had 1,000 times, but are you going to be cool and do it in black and white?
Yes.
Or are you going to stick with color?
No, we're going to go black and white. We're going to
go black
out,
and white again.
Go out the way we came in. We had this discussion.
This is your Raging Bull.
No, the first one was my Raging Bull. Everything else has been downhill since.
That's right.
We had the discussion on that Hollywood Babylon podcast I was just talking about, where we were talking about what do we do it in. I said, I wanted to do it in black and white, but I said, in the age of digital, like, isn't that ridiculous? Wouldn't it be us trying too hard to, because everything shoots color, to then take color out of it? It would be artifice. And then thanks to the very smart audience that listens to the show and follows me on Twitter, immediately I get hit with a bunch of people going, Fincher's using a black and white red camera. It's possible. There's a black and white digital camera. So right then and there, we shot Red State on a red camera, and we absolutely loved it. Dave Klein, our DP, is real familiar with it. So now knowing that Red has a particular black and white camera, we're going to be, it's no longer artifice to me. Look,
yes.
The one thing I'll say is, whether, I don't care what movie it is, man, I try not to lie in the art. You know, art is the lie that tells the truth. So it's something about truth you got to have in there. So for me to kind of like artificially make it black and white would have been like, look, the reason we made it black and white, we didn't have money back in the day. It wasn't a statement on like, this is what it looks like from the perception of the store security camera. We just didn't have enough money. So to then pretend that we don't have enough money, where in this world presumably we would have more, would feel artificial. But now knowing that we can shoot digitally and in black and white, there's honesty there. It's all about keeping it honest, man. It's all, you know.
See, really, you take nothing away from today's show.
As
that's
Rush
what you
told
away.
Us, it's really just a question of your honesty.
Kevin Smith is here. He's a dude who loves movies. You can see the 100th episode of Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. That's coming up on December 22nd at the Lovitz. Tickets are on sale now for that at thelovitz.com. And, of course, New Year's Babble Eve with our own Ralph Garman is going to be on December 31st. Tickets as well are there. We'll return with more with Kevin right after this on the World Famous Camera. A lot of shows still coming up. Comedian Eddie Ift on the program today. Ray Romano is also going to be joining us. Kevin Smith in studio with us right now. Are you dissatisfied with the amount of talk time you're getting here, Mr. Smith? Is that what's
happening
here?
Heavens no. I could stick around. Look, any talk time you give me, any platform where I can go out there and spill my dopey thoughts out, I appreciate it. I take
it. Let me
slobberingly
ask you,
grateful. I'm a fat kid, dude. I appreciate everything that comes my way. Second base, whatever.
Let me ask you this as a famous New Jerseyan. How did Sandy affect you and your people?
Let me see. Of my folks that are back east still, and there are a lot of people, most of them are kind of landlocked and away from the shorelines. The house that I grew up in, I saw a picture of recently, We got hit hard in the nor'easter in 92. It got even worse this time around for Sandy.
Wow.
It looks like Jason Muse went to Highlands, the town we grew up in, town where some of his relatives still live, put a GoPro on his car and just drove up and down the streets. And it looks like the end of World War II. It's not so much like water damage. It's just you can't really see water damage, right, from the street. What you see is everybody's possessions. The tile from the homes, the walls, the everything sinks, gutted from inside these structures and placed out on the street. So you just see massive piles of detritus, and not garbage like banana peels and diapers. I'm talking about detritus. It looked like houses had been bombed, but the houses are standing perfectly still. So of our people, let's say like of the comic book men, from comic book men, we just had our last episode for the first season 2A last week, and then they come back in February. Those boys, Brian, Walter, Ming, and Mike. Brian lives with his parents uptown in Highlands, so he's totally fine. let me see. Ming lives in Red Bank, landlocked. He was totally fine. Walter lives in an area that got water, and his house, this is crazy. I've been to Walter's house, and it is about 16 feet high. You walk up massive concrete steps. It's on a massive platform for this very reason. So when they were evacuating where he lived, the people that brought him out said, look, the water's never going to touch your house. You guys are probably okay, but you got to come regardless. The water did get to their first floor.
Really? Like,
so that meant his neighbors' houses were completely submerged underwater.
This was a storm of the century. I mean, people, here's the thing that anytime a tragedy happens, if it's not where you live, you tend to forget about it after it's not on the news or on the front page a couple of days later. But it's still unbelievable how bad it is in some of those areas that were hardest hit right now. And
was the longest one. Long Island took a long time in places to get their power. And you heard a lot of people from back east complaining about Long Island. But Connecticut. Me and Jay did a show in Connecticut like a month back or something, shortly after Sandy. And as we were staying at the hotel, we dumped the show, we went back to the hotel. All these sketchy-looking dudes came in. Like, as they came through the door, lots of them, they all looked to me like meth addicts and stuff because they're all worn and stuff. I was like, what is this, a meth convention? This is amazing. Let's go, man. Maybe meth mouth's playing. And then you look out in the parking lot, it's a sea of electrical trucks. And it's just all these dudes who'd been working for 48 hours straight trying to get the power back on. Like the first responders, of course, people back east were very appreciative for. But the folks that labored to get you your power back, like I saw them. They were beat to hell, man. Yeah. Like so bad that I was like, this guy looks like a meth addict. It was just a dude who's like, dude, for 48 hours, I've been trying to bring Long Island back online.
Hey, I saw so many buildings on the news where everything that was electrical in the building was completely underwater in the basement. I mean, how do you even start bringing something like that back? You just got to rip it all out and put it all back in again.
Good
just
old Mike Zapsik, who's also on Comic Book Man, he lost his house, went completely underwater. He's in the Long Branch area. He has a 40-year-old comic book collection. You know, he is the biggest geek on Comic Book Man. He lost it all.
Oh, man.
And he was very philosophical about it, dude. When I saw him, I was like, Mike, gave him a big hug. I was like, anything you need, what can I do, blah, blah, blah. He's like, be honest. I said, how you feel about the collection?
Why was he not able to get it out?
It was on the first floor. He has a one-floor kind of place. And so moving a 40-year-old collection, you know, that area had never taken that much water before, too. Yeah. Like, you were seeing water in areas of New Jersey that had never seen water at even the worst storms prior.
That's
so
terrible.
He got swamped, man. He lost all his books. But he was like, look, my kids are fine. My wife's fine. I'm fine. They're comics. I'll find more. And he goes, the hunt begins again. He had such a great attitude about it.
All right, we have to take another break. Hey, when we come back, Kevin, I want you to stick around because we have the Showbiz Beat coming up next. The AFI has just come out with their list of the year's top 10 movies.
Oh Lord, I saw them all.
I know you love movies, and I want to get your take on their list. They did television series, too, which I think is a fascinating list as well. So we'll do all that with our guest, Kevin Smith, when we return right after this on the world-famous K106.7 KRQ. Another quick reminder, if you want to watch night number two of the sold-out 23rd annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas, you can. It's going to be on the website, krock.com, today for free. You can catch up with everything you missed on Sunday night, including the incredible Jack White. Kevin Smith is here, our guest in studio on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Time to take a look at the Showbiz Beat. And I promise the AFI, the American Film Institute, has their list of the top 10 movies of the year, Kevin. And as an avid movie fan and filmmaker, I'm going to be curious to hear what you have to say about some of these movies.
I hope I've seen most of them. It's Oscar season, so you get all sorts of screeners. So I've been catching up and watching lots and lots of flicks.
They don't rank them 10-1, so you won't get a consensus best picture out of this like you will with some of the other critics' lists, for instance. So they have them in alphabetical order. So it won't surprise you that the first movie up is your good friend Ben Affleck's Argo.
Wonderful
movie.
Which must
be so satisfying for you to see him being considered not only great, but one of the best directors working in Hollywood today.
Wonderful movie. There's a dude who sat behind so many great directors and a few terrible ones like myself and picked up a lot of great stuff. People go like, "Who did you ever think?" I was like, yeah, this kid grew up on sets. He was on a TV show called Voyage of the Mimi when he was a child. He's been around production. Yeah, if you were raised in school at a certain age, you were familiar with Ben Affleck's work because he was a little boy on a boat or in a sawmill who'd be like, "Diamond Tooth Gang Saw." Like, he would be the kid that you learned through. So he's grown up around production, always been into production. Even before I worked with him, he had directed a short film called I Killed My Lesbian Wife, Hung Her on a Meat Hook, and Now I've Got a Three-Picture Deal at Disney. So he's been doing this for quite some time. Dude's already won an Oscar for writing. Everyone seems to forget that.
Right. Yeah,
it was just that ridiculous media for a while concentrated on the man's relationship. And that's what I can't stand. The only thing I don't like about this is now people are like, Ben Affleck's back. And it's like, he never went anywhere. You guys just started talking crap about him. And now and now he did something that you like. And you're all like, oh, he's Jesus again. And he's like, ah, he never stopped being Jesus, you idiots.
Next up, Beasts of the Southern Wild. Of course, it's getting a tremendous amount of attention because of that little girl with the unpronounceable name who was only 5 at the time she made the movie. Have you seen this one yet?
That is on my to-watch pile. And then the to-watch pile of movies that have very long names.
Exactly. Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I've seen that multiple times, many times. That made the
list.
You think
it's one of the best movies of the year?
I mean, for me, absolutely. I'm surprised that other people, like, critically jumped on, but I'm glad. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's got weird plot holes, and apparently the autopilot still never got fixed. But other than
your little friend Ralph Garman sure didn't like it much, I'll tell you that.
I know. We did an episode of Fat Man on Batman, one of the podcasts I do, and he just eviscerated it.
Yeah. Talking about the AFI list of the 10 best movies of 2012, Django Unchained.
Oh, I can't
come out
wait.
Till Christmas. You haven't seen that one yet,
no,
right?
I was supposed to go last week, and then I had to leave town, but I can't wait, man.
As a director, it must be fascinating for you to see a guy like Quentin Tarantino, who you can always tell which ones are his movies. I mean, he's got his own... Well, you do too, I guess. People know it's a Kevin Smith movie too, because you have your trademarks, but Tarantino does his own thing, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's like, look, there's definitely some directors who are quote-unquote branded. Tim Burton's definitely one of them. You know Burton movie when they put it up, even if the credits aren't at the head of it. And Quentin's definitely one of those people. You strip the credits, and as soon as people start talking, you would smell that it's him, man. And he is, to me, for my money, he's my favorite filmmaker of all time. So I can't wait to see this.
Number 5 on the list, Les Mis.
I haven't seen that yet either, but I've been seeing billboards.
But it looks great.
Everyone keeps saying her. What's her face? Anne Hathaway is going to win because she sings that song real well.
Life of Pi.
I look forward to that. The trailer looks great. I haven't gotten a screener for that, and it's is it out yet? I think it's a Christmas Day release. Is it out?
No, it's out.
Limited release? I'm being lazy. I can't wait to see it. I love Ang Lee. This Ang Lee, to me, one of the most interesting filmmakers, directors of all time. Because
I agree.
You cannot peg this man. You want to talk about, like, you watch a Quentin Tarantino movie, a Tim Burton movie, you definitely pick up their style. You know from the feel of it. Ang Lee has diversified so many times from the movies he started with, like The Wedding Banquet. And then he goes on to something like Sense and Sensibility, I believe it was.
Did he do Ice Storm?
He did Ice Storm.
Yeah.
He did The Hulk.
But then he did The Hulk.
Brokeback Mountain.
Right.
But I mean, like, say what you will about The Hulk.
Know.
This dude, just every time, you cannot peg him down and go like, well, an Ang Lee movie is this.
Right.
So I can't wait to see. He loves film. This dude loves cinema.
And apparently this is, the greatest 3D experience since Avatar. Apparently this is how 3D is supposed to be used. He's, he's really nailed it.
And, this is the boat movie, right? It's a boy trapped on a boat with a tiger.
Exactly. Yes.
Crazy.
All right, 4 more on the AFI list with Kevin Smith as our guest in the Kevin and Bean Show. Lincoln, Steven Spielberg.
I was just watching this last night. I got a screener. I fell asleep. No, there's no commentary on the movie. I'd woken up very early. My wife was riveted and kept punching me and going like, women didn't get the vote for another 50 years. So she watched it through a completely different prism. Daniel Day-Lewis was spellbinding. He literally is Lincoln at that point.
Yeah.
I know,
like,
some
no
people
one should even show up for the Oscars except for him.
He looks, feels, he doesn't even, you can't find Daniel Day-Lewis in it, man. Like, he's lost. Suddenly, it's the guy from The Penny. It's crazy.
Yep. And it's got to be weird for your wife. She didn't see the Charlie Brown Christmas. Does she know that Lincoln has a sad ending? Is she aware of that, or was that a bad surprise for her?
The whole time, she's just like, I hope it all works out for this Lincoln.
Oh, I'm so happy he's going to the theater. I bet they're going to have a great time. He's had so much pressure.
She had no idea that Lincoln would hit the iceberg at the end of the movie.
While we're talking about great directors, Wes Anderson, who every movie he makes I love. Moonrise Kingdom is on the AFI list.
I haven't seen that. It's about kids, right?
Oh,
it's a camp movie?
Kids who aren't even actors, by the way.
Yeah?
Oh, it's so good. And of course it has.
I'll put that on my
two-watch. It has your Jason Schwartzman and it has, you know, your Bill Murray and all those people that you love from all of his movies in it. It's so good, Kevin. You will love it.
I love Bill Murray. Speaking of which, I just saw him in a movie, maybe it's not on that list, called Hyde Park on Hudson, where he plays Franklin FDR, Delano Roosevelt. And I just want to give you a heads up. Spoilers. So if you don't want it spoiled, cover your ears, go away for about 10 seconds. In the movie, FDR gets, how do you say it on the air? Manual.
Oh, really?
An HJ.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I was spellbound because I thought I was sitting down to watch one of these, like, FDR, me and FDR movies. And apparently, the me and FDR part of it is like, you know, take it out for a walk, would you? It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
I had no idea. I sat down to watch it with my wife, and all of a sudden that happened. I was like, I had no idea. I'm sorry. Laura Linney, man, she's at the receiving end of it. So Bill Murray is wonderful.
We don't like to think about those presidents having sex, okay? We just don't.
The thing I said to my wife is the man's in the middle of World War II. Like,
give him one.
I mean, yeah, just one. It's just,
exactly.
Let him shake it off, if you will.
But
he's great in the movie. He's real. I mean, he's a contender as well for best actor, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Two more on the list, and then we got to say goodbye, Kevin. Okay. Silver Linings Playbook.
A friend of mine made that movie. John Gordon produced Red State.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it yet. They haven't sent me a screener.
All right.
Boy, I'm seeing movies.
Nah, at this time of year, it's tough to leave the house when they just send them to you.
And finally, the one that seems to be on the top of the New York Film Critics and a bunch of other lists already that I can't wait for, Zero Dark Thirty.
That's the Catherine Bigelow's movie, right?
Yes.
And it's about the Osama bin Laden killing?
That's right. You haven't seen that one yet either.
No. But I saw a billboard for it in town, and I love her. I think
amazing.
She's really, really cool.
This was a good year for movies, I think. Not all of them are. I think this one. I mean, there's
still...
You
know, can I give a shout-out to a movie I've seen that I thought was really End of Watch? I got a screener for that. That movie
Jake
was
Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal, and Michael Pena.
I heard it
fantastic
was
film.
Yeah.
And I was talking to some police cats, and they were just like, best movie about police work I ever seen in my life.
They really did work on that.
It is riveting.
They shot it.
And they also use a bunch of different mediums in order to tell the story. A bunch of different stocks, like camera mounts, lots of GoPro action on that. Like when you watch this movie, it's one of these movies that even if you're not a filmmaker, you're like, oh my God, they're literally using a shot from a lapel camera on the dude's chest. This counts? Like, it's anyone's game. It's a riveting, riveting flick. I enjoyed that a great deal, man.
Well, movies are one of the great pleasures in the world.
You know what else is weird? The Impossible.
This time of year.
I saw a movie called The Impossible, and it's got, what's his name? Ewan McGregor, Naomi Campbell. What's her name?
Naomi Watts.
Naomi Watts, thank you.
Yeah.
I said Naomi Campbell, she's a model.
This is the one about the tsunami, right?
Oh, it's nuts, dude. Their family
really?
On vacation at this like little resort, and all of a sudden the 2004 tsunami happens.
Yeah.
It is terrifying. And it's a Spanish-made movie, so that, you know, I guess it's not very dialogue-heavy. It's all about this family trying to make it through this natural disaster. One of the scariest flicks I've ever seen in my life. I thought that was really good, too.
We are out of time.
Dude, the first half hour of Flight is amazing. See that?
We could talk all day about movies, Kevin, but unfortunately we're out of time. Listen, let me give the info again. If you want to see Kevin in person, the 100th episode of Jay and Silent Bob Get Old is happening on Saturday, December 22nd at the Lovitz.
And that's a Sandy benefit, sir. That's a benefit.
Oh,
we were talking about New Jersey before, and I heard you try to get it in, but I was talking too fast. That's a benefit. Anybody out here from New Jersey wants to help out Hurricane Sandy, the 100th episode of Jay and Silent Bob Get Old on December 22nd. All our proceeds were donating to the New Jersey Sandy Relief Fund that Governor Christie's wife set up. So that's where all the food's going, if you want to help.
And then New Year's Eve, of course, also back at the Lovitz, you and Ralph Garman for the third year in a row, bringing in the new year with that show, New Year's Babel Eve. Tickets at thelovitz.com. Follow Kevin on Twitter at ThatKevinSmith. Happy holidays to you, man.
Happy
you and your
holidays
family.
To you guys. So great being with
Thanks
you
Thanks for coming
guys.
In.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
I promise it's not skipping. That's the way the song is supposed to sound. That's Muse on the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. Third show added at Staples Center January 26th. Tickets go on sale Friday morning at 10. Keep listening to K-Rock for your chance to win the tickets. Hi, Eddie Eft.
Hello there, Bean. How are you?
So Woo! Exciting. This last couple of weeks before vacation, before the new year, we get a chance to see our old friends one more time and say goodbye over the holidays until next year. How you been? What's been going on?
I'm doing well. I have nothing to promote, no shows.
Wow.
because I don't work during December.
No, oh, really? That's your rule?
No comedy clubs will work me.
Because,
why?
It's Christmas party time and a lot of corporate parties, and they like making money. They don't need a corporate party walking out going, he just said that.
Yeah.
So it's really funny. Around Christmas, all the comedy club owners kind of like shy away from me like I have a venereal disease.
I didn't even know that. That's super interesting. But you're still doing the podcast, obviously. That keeps you busy.
We're doing the podcast. The podcast is going strong. We were we were actually at our highest rating this week. We're a top 10 show. And,
wow, congratulations.
Yeah, weirdly, though, but we split up. Jim and I broke up.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yes.
Well, I that was a matter of time, though. You guys are both pretty busy. I was always surprised that you were able to be together as much as you were.
It was really tough, especially he's got a TV show now coming on FX, and it makes it his hours. I did an episode of his show, and I couldn't believe how, like, grueling it is.
Really?
Yeah, just being there from so early in the morning to night, and then him coming over and doing the podcast and having to talk and having to be fun, and it was just – it was tough. But it was weird because, like, when we broke up, it was like when when you break up with a girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
And it was like a good breakup. But still, all the language that you use in a breakup with a girlfriend, we were using. Like, it's not
you, it's me.
Yeah, it's not. It was. I swear, I have that text, and it's like we're still gonna be friends. We're gonna hang out all the time. It's just we can't. You know, we're not gonna have sex anymore. And, you know, we might slip every once in a while. I'll do an episode, but
it was. You guys were great together. Like you said, you are gonna hook up. You know, there it is. Again, hook up, one of those phrases. You guys are still, he'll still guest on your podcast and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's not like he's out of your life. So
yeah. And I did an episode of Legit, which is coming out on FX in January, and I get to play his personal trainer in the show. And he ruins my life in it. That's what it is. Instead of me training him, he's training me.
What is Legit about?
It's about Jim trying to clean up his life.
He's the perfect person for that role.
Yeah. If only it was real life.
Yeah, right.
And he'll never do it. I can tell you that in real life.
That sounds great.
As you were sitting down, Eddie, I love this about comedians. You had to go to a funeral over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yet you were complaining about it.
Yeah.
This is what I love about comedians. Oh, my stupid friend with his stupid relative that died. What an inconvenience.
Well, I had to fly to Pittsburgh for the funeral. And uh-huh. the whole time on the flight, I got stuck. You know, when you buy a ticket, like, last second, it's the most expensive it can be. They don't care about bereavement fees anymore.
They don't?
No, they're like, really?
That used to be a thing, right, where you could go and you could kind of plead your case that I didn't plan on traveling. That's why I'm here today to buy a ticket, because someone died.
Yeah, until every single person in the world wanted to go to Florida for the weekend and claim the dead relative there. So they put me in a middle seat. Flying in coach. It was just brutal, flying all the way across country. And I complain about flying. People are like, I love to fly. I fly every week, so it's a pain in the...
Right.
Yeah. So I was sitting there on the plane thinking, am I that good of friends with him? Like,
did you know his mom?
Yeah, I knew his mom. And okay. I grew up, you know, and it was... But it was one of those, like, really? Like, we're, you know, we haven't seen each other in a while. This is 6 hours. And
would it be a big deal if I didn't show? Could I just send a card?
I was just thinking... And then I had to connect, and my connection, they wouldn't let us take off because the president was there.
Oh.
Apparently, they shut down the airport when Air Force One is there until he gets out. And I was just thinking, this is a good excuse. Maybe I could get on a plane back. You know, from Detroit.
Fly there and back and just miss
I was like, yeah, maybe I could, you know, and like send flowers and.
It's not your fault. Stupid Obama. He screwed it up.
Yeah. I love when something like that happens where, I don't have to create the lie. It just happens for me.
Right.
And I don't have to think it up.
let me ask you this, though, because when you're a comedian, you and Eddie, we know you a little bit, and I know how funny you are and how you are able to look at any situation and see the comedy in it. Can you turn that off if you have to be a big boy and be grown up and be with adults at a funeral? Or are you still inside thinking things that are cracking you up?
It's a very difficult feeling because, like, I was a pallbearer in the wedding, and I'm walking down the aisle with, like, my hand on the casket, one hand on the casket, and I'm walking down, and part of me was going, be funny, be funny, be funny, and part of me is like, you have to be completely serious.
Right.
And shut this off. So I shut it off, and then I see a friend I haven't seen in a while, and down low I gave him the finger. And I thought to myself, geez, can't you just shut it off for, like –
an hour, for 1 hour. And I was like, I wonder if anyone else has given somebody the finger while walking down the aisle.
Carrying.
And then I was like, I wonder if anyone else saw that.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing about comedians is they can never stop looking for the light in the situation, you know, the comedy in the situation. Yeah. So, yeah, at a funeral, you don't want relatives to see you flipping off anyone in the audience. That is kind of cool. Eddie F. is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. As you know, one of our favorite comedians we've had on the April Fool's just in the past. He's great. The podcast is great. I'm going to let you describe what it's called and how people can find it before we take a break and come back, Eddie.
It's called Talkins, T-A-L-K-I-N-S. Space Hits, H-I-T-S.
Nice. That's a good way to do
That's how you find it on iTunes, and it's talking hits. That's the way we avoid the censorship. I have a bunch of guys that want to like sell ads for the show, and they're all like, we need to think about a name change. And they're like, we need to make this marketable. And I'm like, yeah, then the next thing you're going to tell me, we're going to have to change the name of the house, which is called the Rape Cottage. And then you're going to tell me, you know, that I can't have the hot dog eating contest that we're having tonight, where they the Hmongs that all work for me, somehow we got on the talk of Joey Chestnuts and all the
eating competitions, yeah.
So
yeah.
We're having a competition. It's our second one we've had.
Can you save that thought? Because we do have to take a break, but I want to hear all about that because I see the things that you put the Hmongs through. I can't imagine what you're going to make them eat and how much. We'll talk more with Eddie F. right after this on the world famous K-Rock. Offspring on K-Rock. It's 106.7 KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. Our friend Eddie F. in studio. Eddie, do you know Ray Romano at all?
I did a TV show Ray Romano did called The Green Room, and mm-hmm. I was on the episode after him. And so
he's so funny.
He is one of the funniest men alive. Like I used to watch him as a kid, like when I was coming up through stand-up, and was like, that's what I want to be, a guy.
Well,
he seemed like he just talked and it was funny.
Yeah,
he is great on Parenthood, and he's a great comedian if you ever get a chance to see him. And he's joining us coming up in about 10 minutes or so, because he just performed in front of President Obama. He was there at the Kennedy Center Honors to help induct award that prize to David Letterman.
Oh wow.
One of his idols too. So I'm going to hear all about that coming up in just a few minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First though, we're talking about your podcast, which you can find on Jay Moore's Fake Mustache Network and also on iTunes, right? People can find the podcast on iTunes, too. You have a group of guys that you torture.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they keep showing up every day.
I don't either.
Do you pay them? Do you pay the Hmongs at all?
No, none of them.
I don't get that.
I don't either.
Like Beer Mug, who works for us, takes a lot of abuse. But at least he's working at K-Rock. And he has a job and he's getting paid and he's hoping it will lead to something else. These guys are working on your podcast. What do they think is going to be the benefit to them at the end of all of this?
I think it's this culture that we live in now. I tell people that our show people are like, what's your podcast? I go, it's kind of like Jackass, but of podcasts. And they're like, but Jackass was visual. I go, that's the best part. No one sees what I'm doing to them. We had a breathalyzer last week on the show to breathalyze Jason. Jason's the one we torture the most. And he gets too drunk sometimes and we have to throw him off the show. So this is what I made a rule. If you get to this certain of level, you can't be on the show anymore because you're obnoxious. So I bought the breathalyzer. He comes on the show. He shows up drunk before we even start. I test him, and he's at 0.08, which is the legal, like, drunk driving.
Right.
And I said, you're already legally drunk, too drunk to drive. And he goes, but not too drunk to podcast. And he drank six – in 1 hour, he drank six shots and had three beers with three shots in the beers. And we were like,
What did his blood level, alcohol level
weirdly,
get up to?
Weirdly, it was only at 0.14 when we tested him. But I guess if you tested him after he threw up 2 hours later, it would have been a lot higher.
Oh,
how long
God.
Did he have to sleep that off at your house?
We don't let him sleep in the house anymore. He sleeps on the deck outside the house.
What was the thing you were doing last night with the eating contest?
Okay, so well, the episode that's up right now is Tommy Chong. We had Tommy Chong show up. And I'm whipped now. I have a girlfriend, all soon to be wife, and Tommy Chong was like excited. They all brought their own weed for him. All the Hmongs are like, I got the best weed. And Tommy Chong was like, well, let's roll it up. And I was like, not in the house. And everybody's like, you're not going to let Tommy Chong smoke in your house. And I'm like, my girlfriend's upstairs. And they're all like, you're really? And I'm like, okay, go ahead.
You're that guy now.
Yeah. So,
But we just had a hot, or we're having tonight a hot dog eating competition. We've done these before where we do eating competitions, and this one. Well, the last one we had was Jim and Ben Glebe did it where they ate foot long Subway sandwiches, but they had to watch starving children in Africa on the TV while they did it.
Oh my gosh.
And this one, they're eating hot dogs. The Hmongs are all eating hot dogs. It's Jason versus Farside. And they're eating hot dogs on their knees while watching gay porn.
Okay. Oh, all right. There it is. Wow. That's the kind of quality you get from the Eddie Ift podcast. You can search. If you just search Eddie Ift podcast, it'll come up that way. And it's got a name we can't say, but it's very, very funny. And that's classic right there. See? That's a good use of time and resources, Eddie.
I was home at the funeral this week, and my mom said to me, one of my friends came up. He goes, oh, I listen to the podcast every day. I love it. I love it so much. And my mom goes, what's a podcast? And uh-oh. I go, don't worry.
Yeah. Not for you. Not for you. Hey, listen, enjoy your couple of weeks off here at the holidays.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you always for all your
holidays to you, too.
All your support of the Kevin Bean Show over the years. We love you, man. We'll
you
see
guys
you
are the
soon,
best.
Right? Take care. Bye.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
Where are you going?
Wherever the music takes me, Kevin.
The world famous K-Rock.
Oh, what a show it is today. Howie Mandel was on the program earlier today. Kevin Smith, Eddie Ift just left. They're all opening up for our friend Ray Romano, who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Ray. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. Quick plug, Parenthood, another new episode tonight at 10 on NBC. You have been phenomenal this season, Ray. It's been so much fun to see you on that show. Is it everything you hoped it would be when you asked to be on it as a fan of the program?
Yeah, it is. It's really been it's cool. They let you do your thing. They let you improvise. I get to maybe kiss Lauren Graham.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, morally, I'm fine there. You know? but I know you're a fan, so
I love that show. And I'm telling you what, I say this all the time, and people yell at me for always talking about it. There's no show on television that has more great actors, especially that is so underrepresented with Emmy Awards. Like, everybody on that show deserves an award. It's unbelievable how great they are as an ensemble cast, you know?
And this year it's been really nutty with the whole story they're doing. But I think there's a college game they play now where you take a drink every time someone cries on the show.
Yeah, that's funny.
You get very drunk.
Well, I wanted to put a plug out there because everybody should be watching Parenthood tonight with another new episode. But the reason we asked Mr. Romano to join us today is because he was part of something that even for a guy who's been around as long as you have, Ray, this must be on the top of the list of some of the most special things you've ever got to do. Kennedy Center Honors, you were there speaking out for your friend David Letterman. In front of President Obama and all of Washington, tell me what it's like to get the call, hey, we want you to come work with the president.
Well, yeah, working with the president. You got to perform in front of him. But it was nerve-wracking. I got to be honest. Yeah, I've been doing this, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 20 years. I've been doing this acting stuff or whatever. I haven't been this nervous in a long time. The last time was probably at the same in Washington also for the press correspondence there. I did with Clinton.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
And I performed there. And, yeah, you're in front of every, you know, all the Hollywood big dudes, and then you're in front of Washington. You're in front of everybody. And you got to do stuff that you've written that on the plane, on the way over. In the last 2 days, I had to write stuff for Letterman and be funny.
Yeah.
And it is very nerve-wracking. And when I went out there on the stage, you know, it's weird because you say that first line, and the first line that's supposed to get a laugh, and you have no idea if it's going to get a laugh. It's like you're jumping off a cliff, and is the parachute going to open? Are they going to laugh? And if they don't, you're dead. You fall to the ground and die.
Do you have any kind of personal interaction with the first family at all when you're at an event like that, or is there a little party, a meet and greet or something?
The night before, there's a dinner. There's a dinner that Hillary Clinton hosts at the State Building, and there's about 300 or 400 people, and they sit you at tables. My wife and I went, and it's banquet, you know, seating, but they sit you on separate sides of the table. They have place settings, and my wife's on one side, and I'm on the other. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh, that's, well, you know what, we got nothing to talk about now anyway. but then it's actually more talking because you got to talk to the people next to you. I got Bonnie Raitt was right to my right. and she's very cool. And right to her right was Bill Clinton. And
That's a hell of a table.
Jeez. Yeah, and he does all the talking.
Yeah, so, of course he does. Of course he does. You, Body Rate was there because the great Buddy Guy was getting the same award. Led Zeppelin was on that same night. You had a very funny line about that. Were you at all, I mean, look, you're a big star too, but when you're at a party with Hillary Clinton and Meryl Streep, do you even get starstruck at this point?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Led Zeppelin, there was an after party afterwards, and I was scared to go up and ask them for pictures, and Kid Rock. I'm suddenly hanging with all these rock and roll guys, and we did get to meet the president. We go to the White House right before the show, and that was wild. And then you stand on a receiving line, you know, he shakes hands with everybody, and it takes 40 minutes to get up to him. And for 40 minutes, you're thinking, okay, I got 3 seconds to say a stupid line. What's your opening line to the president?
Yeah, what are you going to do in that moment that's not going to be embarrassing to you? It's going to be appropriate for the occasion. It's not going to waste his time. So what'd you come up with?
Well, I had seen him 4 years before at the inauguration. I got asked to perform at one of those balls at the inauguration. So all I could think of was, hey, it's been 4 years. And, and he said, and I've aged and you haven't. And I said, well, I dye my hair for TV. And plus, you know what? You got a little more stress than me.
Right.
You know? I'm trying to figure out my lines, and you're trying to find Bin Laden. So... but yeah, it was nice. And then Michelle says, "We watch every night. We watch on TV Land with her mother. Her mother's a big fan of Everybody Loves Raymond."
Oh, that's cool. That's cool too. Let's talk about the reason you were out there. Is they wanted you to speak on behalf of David Letterman. It was you and Jimmy Kimmel and Tina Fey. You guys all said a few words for Mr. Letterman. Why did they choose you, Ray?
You can ask that question about anything. No, they chose me because. Letterman produces Everybody Loves Raymond. You know, I got my first spot on Dave in 1995, and a week later he signed me to a development deal, and 6 months later we developed Everybody Loves Raymond.
So you guys have been friends for decades now.
Yeah, I mean, friends is using the word. You know, I mean, Dave changed my life in that sense. You know, I don't hang with Dave. He likes me, and we talk during commercials. Occasionally about cholesterol or something like that. But I have, you know, he produced Everybody Loves Raymond. I mean, I wouldn't be standing in my closet in my underwear talking to you right now.
Look, but I know.
Kevin,
what...
By the way, I just want to make note, Kevin's not there, and I'm still calling up.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. I traded in that favor.
Like I love you and all the other guys, but Kevin's my backup.
He's your friend. I know. I got that. Yeah.
Cost me $300,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
All right. Let's not bring that up again, Ray. There's no reason to go back to that, okay? I know what it was like for our friend Jimmy Kimmel the first time he did Letterman. It was a lifelong dream of his to get on that show, and I know how he sweated it. Do you remember the first time you were a guest on his show and what that meant to you, Ray?
Yeah, well, it was 95, and I had just gotten fired from news radio. I was cast. You remember the show News Radio?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in the original cast of it, and I was doing stand-up for whatever and, you know, just making a modest living. And then this thing came along, and I flew out to L.A., and it seemed like my big break. And after day one of rehearsal, I got fired. And that's when they replaced me with Joe Rogan.
Well, they made the right choice, though, in retrospect, right?
They did.
Okay.
No, because I didn't, I got to be honest with you. I felt like I sucked. I really did. On the first day of rehearsal, I was like, this is not going well. I just felt it didn't feel right. And the next morning, my manager, I was supposed to be on the set at like 7. My manager called me at 6 and said, they're going in another direction.
Uh-huh, and right, the classic.
Yes, and I was like, well, where? I'll go there. But I went home, and 3 months later, I got my Letterman spot, and I just did my stand-up on Letterman. And very, very nerve-wracking. Letterman was the guy. Letterman was where you wanted to be if you were a comic. And that weekend, it was Saturday afternoon, they called my house. I was in Queens. I was in the backyard. You know, I had two little twins. I was. I don't know what. They were probably trying to eat a worm, and I was hosing them off. And my wife came out with the phone and said, yeah, Letterman people are on the phone, and they wanted to sign me to a deal, and that ended up being the show.
How about that? So just when you were thinking, hey, this showbiz thing is hard, and it was, and you had some defeat,
yeah, well,
that
was something years. That was... I was doing stand-up for 11 years, and I was making a living.
I was getting by,
but you know, I was 37. I was like, what's the next thing? And all these comics were getting development deals, and I had been on every show, so they had seen me. Yeah, I did. I was at that point where I thought, hey, you know, all right, I love doing stand-up, and this is as far as I'm going to get. That's okay.
How about that?
I'm never going to be on the phone with K-Rock.
Well, Mr. Letterman saw something. Yeah, it looks like he was right, Ray, because I think it worked out pretty well for both of you guys, don't you think?
Yeah, it was funny because I said a lot of nice things to Dave during that tribute, and he's up in the balcony, and of course he hates here and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And afterwards, there was a dinner afterwards, and he came by. And again, you know, I know him, but you don't really get to really know Dave. And he came by and he said, "He goes, Ray, that was thank you very much. That was very sweet." And I meant it all. And as he's walking away, he just starts laughing. He goes, "No, you did." And that was it. He was gone. Yeah.
The Kennedy Center Otters, I know it's not the type of show most people think Kennedy Center, oh, I got to see that. That's must-see TV. But this one sounds great with you on it and Tina Fey and Jimmy Kimmel and David Letterman and the tribute to Led Zeppelin and all that great music at the end of the show. It just looks like a great show. Dustin Hoffman also honored that night, too. It airs on December 26th on CBS at 9 o'clock. Don't miss Ray Romano.
Now, hold on. When I hang up. Ralph's not going to do that hack impression of me, is he?
No, he's not. He's not. He's not here either, by the way, today. It's just you and me, Ray. We're all we got, buddy. We're all we got.
No wonder you let me stretch.
And then don't miss Ray tonight as part of the Outstanding Ensemble cast on NBC's Parenthood at 10. Ray, have a wonderful holiday season, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks. Of Monsters and Man on K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. Hey, night number two of the Almost Acoustic Christmas Concert is going to be up online at krock.com for free. This is not archived anywhere. There's nowhere you can see this after the fact. My understanding, Lisa, and maybe you saw the memo too, is that they only play it once. That's it. You got to see it today if you want to see it.
That's right.
Imagine Dragons kicks it off at 10 o'clock this morning, but what a great lineup. Alex Clare and Group Love, Passion Pit, Neon Trees, Fun, our special guest, No Doubt. That'll be just after 1 o'clock today if you want to see No Doubt performing live at krock.com. Then Jack White and The Killers. It's a great, great lineup. If you weren't lucky enough to be there, you definitely want to check it out. And speaking of concerts, real quick, if you love Muse like we do, they are going to... Holy crap.
What's that? What's going on?
It's my doorbell. How weird is that?
That's your doorbell?
How random is my doorbell ringing?
It sounded like a crowd in the background.
It's a bells. I don't know. If
oh
you
my
love
God.
Muse, let me say this real fast. I got to go answer the door. If you love Muse, they're playing January 23rd and 24th. They've just added a third show on the 26th. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10. If you're a Muse fan, you want to win the tickets. We're taking your calls right now. 1-800-520-1067. We're looking for Muse fans. We're going to play Listeneroki. You sing your favorite Muse song. That's fun for everybody. You sing your favorite Muse song, and you could win tickets to see them in concert. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls next on K-Rock.
And how have you thought, what are your thoughts on how it has gone so far?
That's actually a really good question, Beer Mug. In fact, the top 10 Beer Mug moments of 2012. This is something we look forward to at the end of every year. We start looking back on the year that was. Beer Mug. Lisa had another great year on the red carpet for us, don't you think?
I think he delivered. Big time.
So the top 10 Beer Mug moments of the year are coming right up in about 10 minutes or so right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, who wants to win some Muse tickets? Hit it, Steve.
Listen to Rocky, listen to Rocky. That's the game we're going to play. Listen to Rocky, listen to Rocky. Come and sing and don't be late.
Muse is playing Staples Center January 23 and 24 with a third show just added for the 26th. Tickets for that show go on sale Friday at 10. You can go to krock.com for all the details. They are really one of the most exciting live bands. A huge sound. I know there's only three guys in the band. They do bring on a couple of additional musicians to do some of what they do in a live setting.
Mm-hmm.
But they still blow you away with how big their sound is for how few guys are on stage. They're just amazing. And so many great songs. And we want you to sing your favorite Muse song for us right now at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start with Ashley, who joins us on line one, and find out what she's going to do. Hey, Ashley, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
What are we singing here?
Madness.
All right. Good. Good luck with that. Give it your best.
Okay. When I look back at all those crazy fights we had, It's like some kind of madness.
All right, that's fine. I think that's enough. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you. Hold on. Everybody is in the running until they're not. We're just going to have to pick someone at the end of this, you guys.
Okay.
Let's try. Oh, my God. Look at this. Almost everybody on the line is a chick. Is it because only chicks know the lyrics or do only chicks like Muse? What's happening
here? Because we know the lyrics.
Let's go to Rachel's. Rachel's next. She's on line two. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for calling. Why are so many chicks calling for Muse? What's going on, do you think?
I think we just all have a Matt Bellamy thing.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Okay. All right. What about that whore, Kate Hudson, that he's married to? What about her? What do you think of her?
I think everybody wants to be the new Kate Hudson.
I think you're right. All right. We're singing Muse songs. It's Kevin and Bean's Listen to Roki. We heard Madness already from Ashley. What are you going to do for us?
I have Resistance.
Resistance. All right. Good luck.
It could be wrong, but it should have been right. It could be wrong to let our hearts ignite. It could be wrong, are we digging a hole? It could be wrong, this is out of control.
It definitely could be wrong. Thank you, Rachel. You hold on. Let's go to Sophia. Sophia on line three. Hi, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. What Muse song you want to do for us?
I'm going to sing Starlight.
Starlight. All right. Here's Sophia. Good luck.
Okay, my life, you electrify my life. Let's conspire to ignite
Okay, I think we got the idea. I think we got the idea. Nobody is really like belting though. Is everybody at work? Why is everybody like so timid today, do you think?
I don't know. I thought we had one good performance so far.
Sophia, thank you. Let's try April. She's up next. April on line four. We used to call this Listener Roki. Now we're calling it Hot Chicks Singing Muse Songs, but quietly. All right, April, what song are you going to do for us, my dear?
Uprising.
Okay.
Uprising. What do you think of the competition so far? You think you got this?
I want it.
Okay, sing it loud. Let's hear it.
All right. They will not control us. We will be victorious.
Ow.
She sang it loud. That's what you told her to do.
That was my fault. All right, April, hang on. Let's try Becky.
Okay, hi, Becky. Becky, you can do this.
Becky, please, save the segment. Sing your favorite Muse song with Kevin and Bean's Listener Roki. What do you want to do?
I'm going to do Madness.
Okay.
Another Madness. Okay, let's hear it.
All right. When I look back at all the crazy fights we've had, like some kind of madness, swallowing me whole.
Okay.
I think she just petered out. Okay. All right. I actually liked Becky.
I did too.
What did you guys think? Beer Mug? I don't care what you think. Lisa, are you down with Becky?
Yeah, I think our two madnesses were
awesome.
Congratulations. Playing Staples Center. Don't forget, tickets for the third show out of January 26th go on sale Friday at 10. Opening act, Band of Skulls. Go to KROQ.com for another chance to win. Thanks to everybody for playing Listener Roki.
Listener Roki, Listener Roki. Thanks for playing our game. Listener Roki.
Oh, no. Lisa.
What?
This is backfiring. This is not working.
Why? What? What's wrong?
Well, I present for, you know, my evidence that Beer Mug needs to be fired is his interviews. You listen to his interviews, you go, that guy's worthless. Get him out of there. The listeners love them, though.
Because they're gold.
Now people are writing, never fire Beer Mug. Give him 20 moments. Never fire him. It's the best thing on the show and on and on and on.
He doesn't get better. That's the gold of Beer Mug. He never gets better.
But now people want him on the show. That's the opposite of what we need. We don't need more Beer Mug. We need less Beer Mug. Hey, you're going to fill in and do some showbiz here for Ralph Garman, who will, I promise, be back tomorrow. But before you do, Lisa, let's give away this copy of Ted on Blu-ray. As you know, this is the movie that Ralph Garman was the co-star of, along with his friend Seth MacFarlane. Just a genius movie, one of the biggest comedy hits of all time, now available on Blu-ray. That's in stores or online today if you want to buy your own copy. Or you can win one right now at 1-800-520-1067. We also throw in a limited edition 24-inch Ted talking plush teddy bear, which is a very, very hot item. So that's yours. Call right now to K-Rock. Good luck. Here's Lisa with the Showbiz Beat.
So if there's one thing I know, it's that when it comes to rehab, 19 is the magic number. Once you get to 19, it's all gravy. Not a problem.
The first 18 are tough, but that 19th one, man, that just you just go
that
crazy
one
with it.
Sticks. So it sticks. Brooke Mueller, thumbs up for you. I think you're going to make it this time. So she.
And we know her because she used to date. Was she one of the goddesses?
She was married to Charlie
Sheen. Oh, she was married to Charlie Sheen. Okay, gotcha.
She's ex-wife number 3.
All right.
And she was rushed to the hospital last week because she OD'd on, as her lawyer wants to point out, nothing illegal. It was all legal drugs. I think it was Adderall. And she may have had some alcohol in her system as well, a little bit, because they do mention that at one point, because she's actually still on probation from that incident back in Aspen. Do you remember that? Like a year?
Yeah. What did she do? Was there a gun? Wasn't there a gun?
Yeah, I think there was. And now she's prohibited from consuming alcohol.
Right.
But she just had a little bit in her system, I think, when she went into the hospital. So they're hoping that won't be a problem. But she checked into rehab last night because of this Adderall addiction that she has. It's a pretty powerful drug.
And is she playing for the NFL, too, does it say? Yeah. That seems to be the rage these days.
She will be there for an undetermined amount of time. AFI released their top 10 TV shows for 2012. I don't think you can argue with any of these choices. American Horror Story.
This is the American Film Institute.
Yes.
But they put out a yearly top 10 movies, but they also are doing television.
Mm-hmm. Right. So American Horror Story Asylum. Now, I don't watch that.
It's great.
Is it great?
But it's also, I love it. I also see why somebody wouldn't, because it's super cheesy and super scary, too. And bloody and gory.
Do you think it belongs on this list?
I think it's one of my 10 favorite shows on.
No kidding.
Although having said that, there are some shows that are not on this list that, Parenthood is one that I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd swap out that category, but I got no problem with American Horror Story being on that.
You got no problem with Breaking Bad.
Nope.
Nobody has a problem with that. Game of Thrones, I know you don't watch it, but it's great.
Yeah, people
There's
love that.
There's boobies on TV.
I don't know. Every week.
I don't know why you're not watching the show.
I don't either. I mean, that's all you usually need to sell me.
I am baffled. Homeland has been amazing.
Totally.
Louie, always uncomfortable, but
most uncomfortable
genius.
Show on television. Yes. Yep.
Mad Men is great.
Still great, yeah.
Modern Family, probably the best sitcom. Mm-hmm. The Walking Dead, of course, and also Girls, which was such a breakout hit this year.
That was probably, Girls absolutely deserves to be on the list. By the way, that may be the second most awkward and uncomfortable show on television, Girls.
Yeah, maybe that's why some people just, I mean, most of my friends love it, but I know some people who absolutely will not watch it. They saw it once and said, I can't, it's not for me. Can't do it.
Lena Dunham is very polarizing. She either speaks to you or she doesn't, and I'm with you. I love her.
And someone made Lena Dunham sad, and that makes me mad. She has this book, this $3.7 million book that she was proposing and was accepted, and she's writing now. But apparently her proposal was leaked online by Gawker.
Oh, I saw it. I lapped up every word of that proposal. It was awesome.
I'm so sorry I missed it. And maybe it's still out there, but Gawker had to take it down because Lena didn't want it out there. And her lawyers contacted them and said, cease and desist.
All that reading that proposal made me want to do is buy the book even more.
I know, but that's kind of a personal thing. I can see why she wasn't expecting that for everybody to read. So, but here's the thing that's so interesting to me. The writer, his name's John Cook, got rid of they pulled down the proposal, but he had several quotes in his blog post that he didn't take off. And he's added this commentary next to these posts, which is really snotty. Like one of them says, to clarify our intent in quoting the above matter from Dunham's proposal, this demonstrates that she is incapable of conceiving a rationale for writing that doesn't serve the goal of drawing attention to herself.
Oh, I see. So in other words, he kind of annotated with his own snarky comments every point of her book proposal.
Right.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So I just want to say that John Cook is a dick. And a poor loser.
Well, look, there are a lot of people, particularly people, and maybe he's a writer too, who look at Lena Dunham. And how old is she now? 25?
Yeah.
She got a $3.5 million book deal. She's 25 years
old.
And
a hit TV show.
And a hit TV show, right? Which, by the way, comes out on DVD and Blu-ray today. Believe me, I'm going to be picking that up. The soundtrack album comes out next month. I'm picking that up. I mean, she's a money machine right now, and I bet there are some people who are just jealous of that too.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And as you mentioned, her DVD, The Complete First Season, is coming out today. So if you have not watched, I saved all the episodes on my DVR. So I can can go back and watch them anytime. But if you didn't do that, then the complete first season is out today. There's a lot of CDs coming out today, too. There's Trey by Green Day. There's Glee, the musical, the Christmas album. Apparently, that show's still on.
Uh-huh.
If you're a big Nashville fan, like Bean and I are, then Music of Nashville is coming out today. Connie Britton sings some of the songs. Hayden Panettiere. It's really good.
Yeah, I agree. Knew that Connie Britton and Hayden Panettiere could sing, by the way, before this show.
They're so good. And it's not like hardcore country. You should give it a chance. It's really good. Check out the show, too.
Come on, people. Listen to what she's saying.
Unorthodox Jukebox by Bruno Mars. Bean, you're excited about that?
Very. I love Bruno Mars. He, to me, is he's just one of those guys who's got all the weapons in the world. He's a great singer. He's a great dancer. He's a great songwriter. I love everything about him. Very excited about this.
And celebrity birthdays, we have Jermaine Jackson, who's 58. Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue is 54. Monique from Precious, a comedian, is 44. Mos Def is 39. And that's the Showbiz Beat.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And thank you for Beer Mug for helping us hold this together. I think Ralph is going to be back tomorrow. He had something unexpected come up today, but we expect to see him tomorrow. We got a great program planned for you, too, including Jeff Probst back on the show. He, of course, is the host of Survivor and the Jeff Probst Show. And those worlds are colliding this week as he has the five final Survivor finalists on his talk show. We'll talk to him about that tomorrow. Joe Rogan will be in with us tomorrow. We love Joe, as you know. Adam Carolla joins us on the program today. From TV Guide, Michael Schneider is going to be here. We're going to have a nice, fun, I think, end-of-the-year TV conversation.
Oh, great.
What worked, what didn't work, why things are the way they are on TV. We have questions. I think it's going to be a great conversation with a real TV insider to let us know what that business is all about. Trapped in the Closet, Chapter 29 tomorrow, and we've got Muse tickets you can win, too. That's all tomorrow right here on the world-famous K-Rock.